Here on KRXA 540, you can hear a fresh local liberal blowhard.
And another thing, Coach, you could strip me naked, stake me to an anthill, pour honey all over me, and I still wouldn't vote for a Republican.
Hal, on the show, every morning from 9 to 10, only on KRXA 540. Down in
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. Just into CBS News, the prosecutor, Mike Nifong, the Duke Lacrosse sexual assaults case, asking the state attorney general there to appoint a special prosecutor. Also just breaking in the last couple of hours, a miracle in Missouri. A couple of missing kids, one gone for years, showing up today. John Mills, reporter with KMOV-TV.
We're being told that the missing boy, 13-year-old Ben Onby, has been found alive, along with another boy identified as Sean Hornbeck, who was kidnapped from a neighboring rural county several years ago.
Both kids seen walking into the police station, police and FBI agents looking for a beat-up white pickup thought to be involved in those kidnappings. The Dow today, finishing in record-high territory, 12,556, a gain of 41 points. The NASDAQ and the S&P finishing with 5- and 6-year highs. Iran, is that the next target for U.S. troops? The White House says no.
Looking to shut down what he called an urban legend, spokesman Tony Snow emphatically denied the U.S. is preparing to go to war against Iran.
This is something that is very important to push back, because I know there's been a lot of speculation about it. Let me just try to put that to rest once and for all.
Snow said rumors and speculation were ignited by the president's address to the nation, in which he said Iran is providing material support for attacks on American troops, and the U.S. would disrupt those attacks. Mark Noller, CBS News, the White House.
The Democrats doing what they said they'd do, passing a Medicare drug bill designed to get seniors drugs at lower prices. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss on the chances of the bill's future.
Chances of this becoming law are remote. It will be an uphill fight in the Senate, and President Bush has threatened a veto. But Democrats like John Dingell of Michigan were determined to at least try to roll back the provision that prevents the government from negotiating lower drug prices.
The insurance companies are cutting a fat hog on this. And the pharmaceutical houses are able to do just what they want on their pricing.
Republicans say the Medicare prescription drug plan is working fine and shouldn't be changed. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Placido Domingo is about to pack them in at the box office. Moviegoers can see Domingo in the lead role of composer Tom Dunn's The First Emperor. The 65-year-old singer premiered it on the Met stage last month. More than 100 movie theaters are showing a live performance from the Metropolitan Opera tomorrow for a little more than the price of a movie ticket. This is CBS News.
Each and every one of us can be infected with influenza, a serious and often deadly infection. In fact, 1 out of every 5 Americans will get influenza this season. I'm Dr. Julie Gerberding, Director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and I'd like to encourage everyone who wants to be protected from the flu to get vaccinated this season. This is especially important for people at high risk for influenza-related complications.
A message brought to you by the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
I'm Mark Goldston, Chairman and CEO of Net Zero. We started Net Zero 8 years ago to provide the best access at the best price. The Internet's changed a lot since then, and Net Zero's changed with it. We added Norton antivirus, pop-up blockers, and the fastest surfing available over dial-up, and it all downloads in just 2 minutes. We pride ourselves in providing quality Internet access with prices starting at $9.95 a month. Plus, if you're not satisfied within the first 30 days, we'll give you your money back. Call 1-800-NET-ZERO or visit netzero.com.
Okay, we have tried to put off doing this story all day. Why do we keep putting things off?
You say, well, maybe next week I'll get it done. And it takes a while, maybe a month before you get it done.
And now a Canadian researcher who spent 10 years on this, by the way, says we all have to do something about the problem of procrastination now. There are so many distractions these days, TV, email, web surfing. This woman was walking her dog this morning.
I should be on my way to work.
The research says the cost of procrastinating may be in the billions. Steve Kathan, CBS News.
They call him Bex. His wife is posh, and the glam pair is coming to America. British soccer great David Beckham sees himself as being part of history here. Signing to play in Los Angeles, he says his main job is to improve soccer in America. Says it's a sport with much more potential here. The $250 million flanker says he is not coming to the U.S. to be a star, but to be part of a team, work hard, and win. The L.A. Galaxy would probably just as soon he'd be a star. I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
Okay, this is how I run my business. I put receipts at the front of the shoebox. Unpaid invoices go in the back.
But, hon, what happens if you drop the shoebox?
I might cry a little.
You know, there's an easier way to manage your business. Use QuickBooks. It's so simple you can be up and running in under 15 minutes. With just a few clicks, QuickBooks software lets you send invoices, see who's paid you and who hasn't, and get ready for tax time.
Great. What'll I do with my shoebox?
Put shoes in it? Just throwing it out there.
QuickBooks. Better, faster, simpler. Get it at Staples, Office Depot, or Sam's Club.
The following is a paid commercial message.
It's estimated that over 200 million people in the U.S. suffer from herpes-caused cold sores. There are many products on the market today. Relieve One-Day Cold Sores Symptom Treatment is excellent because it relieves cold sore symptoms in just a day. Pain eases in minutes and other symptoms resolve in just 24 hours. Relieve is non-toxic, comprised of botanical extracts, and is 100% guaranteed. Millions of sufferers have found that Relieve works best for them. Only you can determine that Relieve is best for you. You can now buy Relieve at most major stores.
Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for tuning your radio to this spot on the dial or adjusting your computer to capture this audio stream. This is the show they named after me. It's the Peter B. Collins Show, live from the left coast. We originate in San Francisco. I have declared today History Day on the Peter B. Collins Show. We have two historians who will be joining us. First up, Howard Zinn, a name many people know. And later on in the program, Gray Brecken, who's written a fascinating history of San Francisco and Northern California politics called Imperial San Francisco. Gray Brecken will join us in our second hour, and we'll talk about some of that history and how it has led to the new Speaker of the House, who's from San Francisco, Nancy Pelosi. We'll talk about her history, how she got the job, how she took over from the Burtons, and I think it might be interesting to those of you who scratch your heads and say, Nancy Pelosi, where'd she come from? Also on today's program, just about a half hour away, Captain Scott Stanford, who served in Iraq in Ramadi. He's a member of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. He'll be joining us to give us his unvarnished reaction to Bush's new plan. It's new! Can you believe that? He went to Fort Benning and told families of soldiers that this is a new plan? Ouch. And as usual, our final guest, the final hour of the program devoted to election protection and election integrity, our man, Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, will join us in the third hour today. He's got an update on the Christine Jennings challenge to the seating of Congressman Buchanan from Florida and much, much more. That'll be with Brad in our third hour today. As usual, if you care to participate, the First Amendment, as of right now, is still in full effect. And while our phone lines may be monitored by the National Security Agency, we invite your participation. You can call and talk with us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. As I mentioned, we have dubbed this History Day on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took.
Howard Zinn is an historian, a playwright, social activist, a former shipyard worker, an Air Force bombardier. And he is well known for his history books and his seminal work called Vietnam, The Logic of Withdrawal. Howard Zinn, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Oh, well, thank you for inviting me.
Well, it's my pleasure. I firmly believe that many Americans lack context, historical context, and our media, of which I'm some part somewhat complicit, often fails to give us context beyond the last 15 minutes. And as we steer into this next phase of Bush's elective war in Iraq, I thought it would be great to talk with you and get your reflections and some comparisons with the previous conflicts and the political disarray that they produced in this country. First and foremost, what is your reaction to the president's speech the other night, and just how new are these ideas?
Well, no, the ideas are not very new. I don't know when we have heard a new idea from this administration. I think what we have here with Bush's new plan is something that Pete Seeger described in one of his songs, which you may remember, Waist Deep in the Big Muddy. The idea, I think Pete Seeger's song came from an actual incident where a training session with Marines, and they were going through a river that they thought they could ford. They were carrying very, very heavy equipment, and they were sinking. They were sinking up to their shoulders and then their neck. But the sergeant said, keep on, until some of them drowned. And Pete Seeger wrote this at the time of the Vietnam War, when Lyndon Johnson was escalating the war and doing exactly what George Bush is doing now, and saying, if we only had more troops, another 100,000 troops, another 100,000 troops, victory will come. Waist deep in the big muddy, and the big fool says, push on. Mm-hmm. I think that's what Bush is telling us. It's sort of the, instead of something new, it is a continuation of what has failed. It is a sort of meets the definition of fanaticism, which to me means if you find you're going in the wrong direction, you redouble your speed, which is what Bush is proposing. It has failed. Our policy in Iraq has failed for, well, now almost 4 years.
Well, and didn't he really just attempt to change the marketing the other night? I mean, 20,000 troops, it's really insignificant. And when you see the challenge that our soldiers face there in Iraq on so many different levels, it's preposterous to believe that this could make any substantive difference.
Yeah, well,
even if you want to be really generous and sympathetic to the president's point of view, which doesn't work for me.
Yeah. Well, it means that he doesn't want to acknowledge that his policy has failed, and he wants to take one last stab at possibly getting something, a 1,001 shot. I think that what we face now as a result of his policy, if these 20,000 more troops are sent, of course, we are going to face more people dying, more people getting dismembered. We're going to have more situations where soldiers are breaking into people's houses. I mean, that is what's meant by securing an area. That's what's meant by going into Baghdad and clearing out the terrorists. The truth is, we don't know who the terrorists are.
Yeah.
It's not an army facing another army, and you know who the enemy is. And because we don't know who the terrorists are, the American military has been breaking down the houses of ordinary people, dragging people out, detaining them, because it doesn't know who the terrorists are. It bombs, it rockets cars, not knowing who is in the car.
White phosphorus, like we used in Fallujah, and claimed it wasn't a weapon.
Yeah, and we're using deadly weapons in Iraq.
Well, we're using weapons of mass destruction. We're using depleted uranium. We're using the white phosphorus I referenced in a technique that the troops have dubbed shake and bake.
And I think that's true, and I think also that this is being used not just against the Iraqis. It will come back and haunt us, because when you use this very advanced weaponry, it hurts your own soldiers. You can't keep them immune. We have soldiers who came back from the first Gulf War, very large numbers of them, affected by the depleted uranium that we were using in that war. And just as in Vietnam, the Agent Orange that we were spraying in order to destroy the land of Vietnam were also hurting our soldiers who came back and found that their wives were giving birth to deformed children. Mm-hmm. So that the war is not just a war against the Iraqis, it's a war against our own people, it's a war against our own soldiers, who will suffer death and dismemberment in the immediate sense, and in the long run, years from now, we will see a psychic disorder, we will see suicides, we will see the effects on the children that their wives will bear. It is really a continuation of the horror story of Vietnam and of the first Gulf War.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Professor Howard Zinn, historian, here on the Peter B. Collins Show. We're about to go to a break, and if you'd like to talk with Mr. Zinn, you can join us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. And in the next segment, I want to get his thoughts on the political composition right now. Just yesterday, Senator Russ Feingold uttered the words that many of us have been waiting to hear, that it's time to use Congress's power of the purse to rein in this wayward president. We'll talk about that and the other efforts of the Democrats. And I want to direct you, if you have access to the Internet during this break, go to truthout.org, where my able producer Matt Renner has a story that was just published in the last hour about Congressman Sam Farr, the Democrat from the Central Coast who appeared on our program just before the president's speech on Wednesday, and on Thursday introduced a powerful resolution calling for the repeal of the authorization that sent our troops to Iraq. And the second paragraph calls for the troops to be brought home forthwith. We'll talk about that and more with Howard Zinn as we continue. 16 minutes past the hour. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens, he cares.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540.
If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
Thank you.
The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Come on in and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything's so tasty, you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a good affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus stew. A side of couscous and a baba ghanoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery. MPG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
Hi, this is Scott Dick, your host of the Tasty Planet Radio Show. Every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and travel across the U.S. and around the world. I interview authors, chefs, winemakers, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m. for tasty new shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
Show with Professor Howard Zinn. He cited Pete Seeger.
Those who start wars, never fight them.
I think his contemporary counterpart is Michael Fronte.
Those who fight wars, I never like them. Those who ride long.
That's Michael Fronte and Spearhead. The new CD is called Yell Fire, and that song's called Time to Go Home. Professor Zinn, I wanted to ask you just about the political climate and your sense right now of whether we are seeing a sea change, and if the Democrats are properly reading both the American public and what I call the political minefield that they have to navigate that's been laid out by the Bush administration and other opponents. I cited that Russ Feingold, the senator from Wisconsin, yesterday in the hearing with Condoleezza Rice, for the first time flatly stated that he believes it's time to use the power of the purse, the power of financial authorization, to rein in the president. And he went beyond Senator Kennedy's proposal, which was to link it only to these additional troops recently proposed and to aim it at the overall military effort overseas. What are your thoughts about that, and do you see the Democrats really gaining strength, or should we keep holding their feet to the fire?
Well, the Democrats always have a tendency to be timid, to be cautious, to take a way out which they think gives them political advantage, but which doesn't go too far away from orthodoxy. And yet this is a time, exactly the time, when Bush is proposing this increase in troops. This is exactly the time when the Democrats should be shouting in the halls of Congress and in the House of Representatives and the Senate, when they should be shouting their indignation and their anger making it clear that they want the war to stop, not just that they want to stop this escalation. What I think to do is, Senator Feingold suggests, and that is cut funds for the war entirely and force a withdrawal of American troops from Iraq. That's exactly what we need at this point. The Democrats will not do it unless there's a great popular upsurge in this country. Let me put it another way. If there's going to be a surge that we can support, it should be the surge of protest that takes place throughout the country and which tells our representatives in Congress that we insist that they obey the will of the American people. The American people now, by a very large majority, are opposed to the war. By a large majority, they want the United States to withdraw troops either immediately or very soon. And if our congressmen, and especially the Democrats who have just won their victory in both houses, if they do not listen to the voice of the American people, then they are failing their responsibility as representatives. And what they're doing is making a sham of democracy, making a sham of the idea that we live in a country where the voice of the people is represented in the halls of Congress.
Because so many Democrats fear using that financial, the power of the purse, as it's called, in my conversation with Congressman Farr the other evening that I referenced, I suggested that we focus on the legal authority of the president to conduct this occupation, because he's way out of sync with even what passed for not a declaration of war, but an authorization for the use of military force. And Sam Farr's very simple and powerful resolution calls for the repeal of the October 2002 resolution. And then Part 2 reads simply, the president shall provide for the withdrawal of units and members of the U.S. Armed Forces deployed in Iraq as part of Operation Iraqi Freedom in a safe and orderly manner.
Yeah, well, I think Farr's resolution is exactly what we need, and it's something that people should rally around, and that people should hold it up before their representatives in whatever congressional district they are and before their senators and say, this is what we want you to support, no less, because we don't want one more American to die in Iraq. We don't want one more Iraqi to die because of the presence of Americans in Iraq. And remember, although many of the people in Iraq are dying as a result of the warfare between the factions, many of them are also dying because of American military action in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And the sectarian violence itself of Sunni against Shiite is itself provoked by the presence of American troops.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think a resolution calling for the stopping of the war, for the withdrawal from Iraq, mm-hmm. is something that should be first thing on the agenda.
All right. Well, Professor, I want to thank you for joining us today. I promised to let you go a little early because
sure.
you've got another interview coming up. And I want to direct people to the website howardzinn.org, where they can get more information. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Peter.
Nice to talk with you. Dave joins us from Humboldt, Eureka. Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
I was hoping to get Professor Zinn's view on this, but...
I'm sorry the timing didn't work out. I had agreed to release him early. He's got another interview in a minute, so...
Right. Well, I would have asked him to explore with me the other frightening possibility that what indeed we are witnessing is a further unfolding of the PNAC plan, and that the troops are needed there because it is fully the plan, as ridiculous as it may sound, of these cons to invade Iran on top of all the other problems we've got. So.
Well, Dave, it's really interesting because finally the corporate media has gotten whiff of the intentions toward Iran, and some of it seems to be propelled by one-on-one conversations the president had with news anchors like Chris Matthews and Brian Williams before his speech the other night. But they came away clearly, Tim Russert too, kind of scared shipless, and that was a P, not a T, of what they saw the president's thinking and I think his demeanor. So I, you know, after talking about the risk of this situation with Iran for many months, I'm a little gratified that it's starting to creep out there into the mainstream media. Dave, thanks for listening. Thanks for calling today. Coming up next, a man who served in Iraq will join us, Captain Scott Stanford, next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Concerned about the steady increase in home mortgage interest rates? Don't panic or overreact. Now is the time to analyze the many available options and to choose the best possible course. Leverage the equity in your home to reduce or eliminate high interest and non-deductible debt. Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage, invites you for a free consultation in his Salinas offices at 201 John Street. To schedule your free Creative Mortgage consultation, call Victor at 757-0436 right now. That's 757-0436.
Join me, Deborah Lindsay, each Sunday afternoon at 2 for Tomorrow Matters. We'll be matching the global problems of today with the local solutions for a better tomorrow. I'll bring in the guests, and you call with the questions and ideas, and collectively we'll set the standards for a more sustainable future, because for all of us, tomorrow matters. Join me right here on KRXA 540 AM for Tomorrow Matters each Sunday at 2.
Salt means that our investigation turned up nothing.
Could somebody testify lying before a grand jury doesn't mean he's involved.
It is flat out absurd. Bush was begging that governor on the Sunday before the hurricane hit to get people out of there and declare an emergency.
It's all crazy propaganda. The Joseph Goebbels Network.
Bush was on the phone with her. They were thinking about sending the military in because the state and local people weren't acting fast enough.
It is certain that some self-possessed judge somewhere will soon rule that three men or three women can win.
Yet Iraqis are united in a broad and deep conviction. 12 government ministries are currently under the direct control of Iraqis. I don't think that's too high a standard.
If you retire, you don't have anything to worry about. Probably say it three more times. See, in my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in. Got to catapult the propaganda.
The Peter B. Collins Show continues. It's a chilly but clear Friday afternoon here on the left coast. San Francisco Bay is beautiful. Visibility 25 miles, and the bay is the color of Superman's hair. Can you visualize that?
Wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in bed. No more backward thinking. Time to think in here. The world is changed so very the way it used to. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Lead it in their listen for what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can.
That's my man from Compton, Keb Moe.
If we just let it be.
It's called Wake Up, Everybody. We're joined now by Captain Scott Stanford, an infantry officer, thank you, who served in Ramadi, Iraq as a platoon leader in a cavalry troop and commander of the headquarters and headquarters company of the 1st Battalion, 172nd Armor during 2005 and 06. His unit worked to control insurgent-dominated areas on the Euphrates River and turn them over to Iraqi police and military forces, and to provide security in and around Ramadi during the constitutional referendum and general elections of 2005 that the president was touting just the other night. Scott lives in L.A. with his fiancée, Captain Megan O'Connor, who served two tours in Iraq. Scott is a member of the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. Thanks for joining us today, Captain.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Without me trying to poison your mind or lead you in any direction, tell me your unvarnished thoughts about the president's speech to the nation on Wednesday night.
My unvarnished thoughts about him?
Yes, sand them down so there's no varnish left.
I don't think it represents a new direction for what we're doing. I don't see where the plan has changed at all or where there is an actual plan now. I mean, the biggest problem we had during the year I was there was that there was no plan. There was no clear picture of what the end state was supposed to be. And now this is the same lack of a plan with 20-some thousand additional troops in it. And then if you look at the way that breaks down, first of all, you get the surge by extending units that are tired and need to go home.
Mm-hmm.
You get the surge by sending National Guard units back over there 3 years after they were already there, which is devastating to them professionally and is not what their families signed up for when they became reservists.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, he wants to send 4,000 troops to the Anbar province. And I mean, I heard that and I thought he can't really be serious. Like 4,000 troops is going to make a difference. If you look at Anbar province,
it's huge.
It's huge. And it stretches, you know, and you're talking about cities like Fallujah, Ramadi, and then all the way to the Syrian border. If we had 4,000 additional troops in Ramadi when we were there, that probably would have gotten us to a level where we could maintain our steady state operations and actually have the capacity to do a lot of the other things we would have liked to have done. But that's in Ramadi alone. So you factor in Fallujah and then all the rest of that territory, you know, another couple hours drive out to the Syrian border, and it's laughable.
Now, what do you think of this? The president acknowledged that mistakes were made and in the passive voice said that, you know, he's responsible. He takes responsibility. But let me just read this verbatim from his speech the other night. Many listening tonight will ask why this effort will succeed when previous operations to secure Baghdad did not. Well, here are the differences. In earlier operations, Iraqi and American forces cleared many neighborhoods of terrorists and insurgents. But when our forces moved on to other targets, the killers returned. This time, we will have the force levels we need to hold the areas that have been cleared. In earlier operations, political and sectarian interference prevented Iraqi and American forces from going into neighborhoods that are home to those fueling the sectarian violence. This time, Iraqi and American forces will have a green light to enter those neighborhoods, and Prime Minister Maliki has pledged that political or sectarian interference will not be tolerated. Now, your reaction, is any of that true? I mean, he's claiming that it was just some sort of an oversight, or as if the universe conspired to, you know, violate the American vision. But this idea that, you know, we didn't have enough forces to hold the areas that we cleared, that's what Shinseki told him before he went in.
Well, that's exactly right. The other thing I'll say about that is, you know, people fail to consider when you talk about it in those terms, you're talking about people that live in Baghdad. If you telegraph to them 2, 4, 6 months ahead of time, hey, we're coming to clear out Baghdad, they will simply move. It's like saying, we're going to lock down the island of Manhattan. Okay, that's fine. Well, thanks for the six-month notice, I'll move all my stuff to the Bronx. Because I live in New York, and it doesn't make any difference, and when you leave, I'll go right back to doing what I was doing. And it would happen to us in Ramadi all the time. You know, as their network was such that as soon as they saw our vehicles coming out the gate, they would telephone each other or whatever their signals were, and everyone would be gone by the time we got there. And I'm talking about in a matter of a half hour.
Mm-hmm.
So to say, well, here we come to clear out Baghdad is kind of a dream. And then the other thing I'll say about Prime Minister Maliki is, you know, I mean, he claimed previously in August that he was going to deploy 12,000 additional forces to Baghdad. He never did. He claimed that he was going to disarm the militias by the end of 06 or beginning of 07. He never did. He depends very heavily on a voting bloc in parliament that is largely controlled by Muqtada al-Sadr, so
right.
I'm not really sure. I don't think that Maliki is going to be able to make good on any of this, and so then what are we saying if he doesn't? You know, what are the consequences, first of all? And if there are consequences, then really what we're saying is the Iraqi government doesn't have the sovereignty we claimed that it had. And I think that in doing that, and also by sending 12,000 additional troops, 20,000 additional troops, however many troops, into Baghdad, you're legitimizing the violent resistance. Because it doesn't look anything to the Iraqi people the way we said it was going to look. You know, we said there would consistently be fewer troops. We said the Iraqi government was going to be sovereign. You know, we said we were going to do this in such a way that would be of the most benefit to the Iraqi people in terms of their infrastructure, in terms of job opportunities. You know, I mean, that's the kind of thing that I didn't really hear any concrete, fundamental changes that the president's talking about that are going to allow those things to happen. And
yep.
It's great to talk about rebuilding the Iraqi army, but there are so many bigger issues than just sending more people in there and calling them trainers. I mean, when I was over there, you had people that were training the army who were superior. I mean, some of the best soldiers I've ever known were in that job, but also some of the people that no one else wanted were in that job. You had people that were truck drivers that were sent into the job of training combat forces. I never saw anyone training Iraqi auto mechanics. There was a big effort to get the Iraqi medical program for their army stood up, but it was a long way
mm-hmm.
from being able to do it. You know, I didn't see anyone training Iraqi truck drivers. It's an army that can't move itself, it can't feed itself, it can't repair its equipment.
Well, and it also is unable often to deploy troops outside of their home provinces for both ethnic and other reasons. And, for example, on paydays, it is reported that often the troops go home to take the money home because the banking system isn't reliable, and so they want to get money to their families, and all of a sudden the force is reduced sharply by these guys who are just taking their paychecks home.
Well, that's absolutely correct. I mean, part of the other problem is a certain percentage of that money just never makes it to them. I mean, the Iraqi army is rife with corruption, and as you pointed out, there is no real central banking system nationally there. So you're giving a certain amount of money to a brigade commander, let's say, which is the payroll for his unit, and it's cash. However much of it ever ends up in their hands is open to debate, but to listen to the Iraqi foot soldier tell it, a lot of that money is not making it to them. And then you're right. I mean, the only way they can get that money to their family is they have to take it in person.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times they just don't come back.
Yeah.
I mean, for one reason, they're in grave danger by being a part of the army.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they don't. You know, some of the guys that were recruited from different areas didn't want to come to Ramadi. They're Shia. They don't really care about what's happening in Sunni areas. You know, you let them go home and leave, and they just don't come back. For a lot of reasons. So
we're talking with Captain Scott Stanford, Iraqi vet, member of IAVA, and that's Iraq-Afghanistan Veterans of America. If you have a question or comment, he's with us till the top of the hour, and lines are open at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Now, one of the things I'd like to ask you about, given your experience on the ground in Iraq, is just how far out of touch the president is. Because we have these Hobson's choices, no-win situations, that if we back the Maliki government and the ministries that are seated with al-Sadr's militiamen from the Maqdi army and certainly tilt pro-Shia, And then we attempt at times to defend the Sunnis and try to prop them up, even though their population is the minority. They, of course, have the legacy of being the Ba'athists and Saddam's team. And so as these two warring factions engage, we become a tool for each side against the other, often in ways that we can't either see or control. Do you have any examples of situations where you got caught in the crossfire and you couldn't tell who was friend or foe, and you could see that they wanted you to preside over the ethnic cleansing of the other group?
Well, in Ramadi, we didn't have a lot of an ethnic cleansing situation. I mean, it's very heavily Sunni. You know, we did come across Shia families from time to time with all of their belongings in the back of a truck that were headed out of town because they were given very pointed threats that they needed to leave. But I think you point out something which is definitely the case, which is that we approached this with very little, almost no cultural understanding of what we were getting ourselves into, and the results pretty predictable. You know, I would hesitate to say that the president is so out of touch, that, you know, I don't want to lay all the blame at the feet of the president. I mean, I think when I was there, there were a lot of ways in which we could have succeeded in our mission in Ramadi better than we did. And don't get me wrong, I mean, I think we were the 28th Infantry Division out of Pennsylvania, which is who I was attached to, with 2nd Marine Division in Ramadi. I think we made a lot of positive difference for the people that were there during that time. But, you know, when I say it's, I wouldn't lay all the blame at the president's feet. I mean, I think there's a lot more that the Army and the Marines could do for themselves to help us out in that situation. I mean, you hear them pay a lot of lip service to training more linguists and that sort of thing, but I haven't heard any concrete plan of how we're going to get, you know, you can send 20,000 more troops in there, but how many more of those troops can actually talk to the people on the ground?
Well, Scott,
maybe
I wouldn't.
And to wage a counterinsurgency, you know, the prize is the people. You absolutely have to be able to deal with the people.
Mm-hmm. Scott, I wouldn't lay everything at the feet of the president. I do understand the way the system works. But given this very public consultation that took place, the report from the Baker Commission, the consultation with generals, with leaders of Congress, he ignored virtually everyone and has come out with a plan that is Stay the Course Part 2. And that is fully his responsibility. He's made a conscious choice to continue on what is clearly a failed path.
Well, he has, and I think that a lot of that problem is that he's entrusted these decisions to people that, frankly, were not equipped to make these decisions, and he's stuck by them. And I think that's been his primary failing where this is concerned.
Is that Rummy you're talking about?
Well, that's one of them, but, you know, the vice president has not done a great job.
Mm-hmm.
The entire national security team has not done a great job. And, you know, and in my mind, the real scourge of the Army, in any, particularly in any combat environment, is careerist officers that say whatever's in the best interest of their careers and not what's in the best interest of the troops. Unfortunately, most of the officers that had the best interests of the troops at the upper levels of the Pentagon have, for one reason or another, decided not to stay in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
So you're left with, you know, having to make a choice from among a bunch of decisions that really reflect the interests of the people that are just looking out for their career.
A quick break and we'll return with Captain Scott Stanford. He's a member of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. If you have a question or comment, bring it on now. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. We'll continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
This is Frank Don. On Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. here on KRXA 540 a.m., join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour, a live call-in program to discuss astrology, the astrology of the world, and your own personal astrology. Let me answer your questions, and let me teach you how astrology can help you make better life choices. Here on KRXA 540 a.m., from 7 to 8 every Sunday evening, join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Hey, good looking. What you got cooking? How's about cooking something up with me?
I'll tell you what I got cooking. Dinner's ready. I went to dinnersready.com, chose 8 gourmet dinners, made an appointment and went to their storefront in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove and prepared the meals there myself. Now I'm cooking them in my own home.
What's that you say? Dinner's ready?
That's right, dinner's ready. It's the newest concept in home cooking. They do all the shopping and chopping, and I get all the credit. If you're too busy to go in and make your dinners, they'll even do it for you. So sign up at dinnersready.com, stop by and see them in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove, or give them a call at 645-9100. That's 645-9100. Dinner's ready!
Hi, this is Stephanie Miller. You know how much I love the Monterey Peninsula. You've got it all. Mountains, the sea, some of the best box wine I've ever had. You also have a great radio station, KRXA, your progressive prescription. So join me, voice guy extraordinaire Jim Ward, and producer Chris Lavoie as we take back America every weekday morning, 6 to 9 a.m., right here on AM 540.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm still your humble host, Peter B. We're talking with Captain Scott Stanford, who served at least a year in Iraq. He's a member of Iraq-Afghanistan Veterans of America. And on the line with us, I got to switch screens here, Leonard in Glendale. Hello, Leonard. Welcome back to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hello, sir, and hello to the other gentleman there.
That's Captain.
Captain.
How are
you? I like the organizations that are standing up for veterans, but I really do believe if George Bush, you know, who continues along with the other people here that want to believe in this lunacy of us continuing on with this thing in Iraq, we are going to have to encourage soldiers, and I know your captain there is a good man and he won't ever accept this probably, but we have to encourage soldiers by having some type of organization set up or organizations across this country where money would be donated into a fund. So that, because most of the soldiers I knew in Iraq, and I still know, they're loyal Americans, and they're understanding now that, yes, it's wrong to do so, but they have the reality of having, you know, children and a family to take care of, and they can't pay their medical insurance if they get out of the military. At least they think they can't. They've been told that, you know, it's really bad out on the block, as we call it in slang. So, you know, the officers, the powers that be, would call this mutiny. I would call it the rise of the American soldiers standing for what is right, standing for the Constitution, and as the good officer said, there are certain military people now who seem more interested in their careers while the good officers have been pushed out. So I'm not going to let Casey off the hook and Abizay totally because they stayed around long enough. Instead of worrying about getting promoted, a good officer should also, besides worrying about the mission, should worry about his or her men. So I'm not going to let President Bush off the hook. I like Harry Truman's model where the buck stops here on your desk. And I'm sorry if he's not a wise man and he appointed the wrong people, but we elected him president, and he does have the responsibility for what's going on.
All right, Leonard, thank you.
Thank you, and you guys keep up the good work.
All right. Captain, what's your comment?
Well, I guess I'm not clear on what he was proposing, but I will say that.
I think without being explicit, he's suggesting that it is within the rights of individual soldiers to refuse to return to Iraq. So let's put it in a specific case. What do you think of Lieutenant Aaron Watata?
You know, my personal thought is it's absolutely reprehensible. I mean, especially as an officer. I mean, I volunteered to go to Iraq when I didn't have to go, not because I wanted to go see a bunch of death and destruction and because I wanted to live in god-awful conditions over there, but because your charge as an officer is to lead the men and women that are whose lives are entrusted to you. You shouldn't become an officer if you don't want to lead people that are going into a bad situation. Those troops that lieutenant abandoned are still going to Iraq, and now they're going without the officer that they trained with. And also, I think that if you want to fix an organization, there's a lot to be said for fixing it from within. You know, anything that develops kind of as a clique like that, whether it's as big as the Army or as small as a club in your school, this really doesn't appreciate a lot of commentary from the outside world. But if you can be on the inside and say, listen, this is not working, let's do this a better way, they're much more likely to listen to you. In that case, I don't think it's within a soldier's rights to refuse to go serve, and I think you can make a lot more difference by going over there, particularly as an officer, and making sure your troops do the right thing, making sure your troops have the correct focus on counterinsurgency, making sure your troops take the time to learn phrases in Arabic and the Iraqi dialect, and doing the right things when you're over there.
Well,
they're going to happen, but you shouldn't have joined the Army if you weren't prepared for that.
Well, I respectfully disagree on both counts, because I think that Lieutenant Watata has made a clear case that he believes that this war is fundamentally immoral and illegal, and that it is within his rights to refuse to accept an illegal order. And to your point about working from the inside, that can produce incremental results, but it can't deal with a fundamentally flawed policy that is using American troops in a way that I don't believe, you know, was
But neither
ever...
can simply refusing to go. I mean, that's not going to change the policy. And when you say it's illegal, on what basis? I mean, I may or may not agree with you, but that's not the point. But who has so far said it was illegal? You know, I mean, our laws in this country are decided by the Congress.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so has an international court called it illegal? Now, they might. If they considered it, if anyone ever took up that question, and maybe they should, you know, it may come out that it's illegal. But until there's some baseline by which soldiers can judge and say definitively this is an illegal order, then you can't just go around. You cannot never have a situation in which the soldiers of your military are independently and arbitrarily deciding the legality of things.
I understand your point, and I understand that it's contrary to many of the basic tenets of you know, military structure and loyalty. I do think that there are cases that cause exceptions, and I believe that this is one of them. So we can agree to disagree on that.
Absolutely.
I do respect your position. I just honestly think that this is one of those cases where Lieutenant Watata is showing courage and true leadership, and he's probably going to pay a pretty heavy price for it. So I want to return just briefly here to the focus in Iraq and what your sense is based on your own experiences. That, you know, can the Maliki government be trusted? And is the president, you know, striking a bargain that simply will unravel as quickly as previous ones have? The reaction from Baghdad to the president's speech was silent to negative.
Yeah.
And they don't agree with the representations the president made that this is an Iraqi plan.
Well, that's absolutely the case. And, you know, how do you feel when you've been there a year and now you're saying you're indefinitely going to be extended to stay in a situation like that where the legitimate government or as legitimate a government as they have doesn't even really want you to stay there?
Mm-hmm.
And also, I mean, the rest of the plan in terms of interjecting more Iraqi troops there, my understanding is those Iraqi troops are Kurdish Peshmerga. I mean, there is a real chance that this policy, this surge in Baghdad could flame this fire way out of control, like well beyond anything that we've seen so far.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you for joining us today, and in addition, I thank you for your service.
Well, thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be on the show.
Nice to talk with you. That's Captain Scott Stanford, a member of Iraq-Afghanistan Veterans of America. Coming up next, we're going to talk about a fascinating story about how different states around the country are selling off toll roads and bridges to foreign-owned companies. Dan Shulman, investigative reporter at Mother Jones, will join us next. And next hour, too, Gray Brecken, a California historian, talks about the Burton Pelosi machine and where the Speaker of the House came from. That's ahead on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Join Glenn Brooks and pioneering dentist Dr. Floris Day in igniting a new wellness revolution that redefines the word natural and puts the tools you need for complete vitality into your hands. If you have avoided or hated the dentist or simply want to take your health up a notch, this is the program for you. Tune in to Vibrant Living right here on KRXA 540 AM at 10 o'clock this Saturday morning, January 13th.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540. If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
A missing Missouri boy is found alive along with another boy who disappeared 4 years ago.
Both boys appear at this point to be okay.
The Duke Lacrosse prosecutor asked to be recused.
He's finally realized that he has become the story here.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Bill Whitney. An incredible story with a happy ending is unfolding in suburban St. Louis. On Monday, 13-year-old Ben Ownby went missing somewhere between his school bus and his home. He's been found, apparently unharmed.
We did locate Ben this afternoon in the city of Kirkwood, and we've also located Sean Hornbeck, who was at the same residence with him when he was located.
Sean Hornbeck had been missing since October 2002. He was 11 when he went for a bike ride and never returned. The case has weighed on local law enforcement. Sheriff Gary Telke says the boy's name came up as they were planning the raid in Kirkwood.
We were talking about this morning in just kind of a roundtable discussion. We knew that there was a juvenile in this house or in this apartment. Lieutenant Marquardt made the comment, it's probably Sean Hornbeck just off the cuff, and is really strange that it turned out to be him.
The tenant in the apartment is 41-year-old Michael Devlin. He's charged so far with one count of first-degree kidnapping. Now this.
Brenda Coates is a real GEICO customer, not a paid celebrity. So to help tell her story, we hired Mr. Burt Bacharach.
Last year, I was rear-ended by a GEICO customer.
I was hit in the rear.
First thought in my mind was about that funny lizard.
Lizard licks his eyeball.
I was so impressed with how they handled my claim, I switched.
I hope I'll never get hit in the rear again.
GEICO. Real service, real savings.
Let's kick back for the moment. Let your worries drift away, cause here we're living for today. Let's go out back tonight.
Let go of the day. Go out back tonight, where fresh R.E. Turner is seasoned, seared, and served on a bed of crisp romaine. Start the new year fresh. Leave your worries at the door.
Let's go out back tonight.
Tonight, let go.
Life will still be there tomorrow.
Go out back.
With the case apparently crumbling, Mike Nifong, the district attorney who brought sexual assault charges against three Duke University lacrosse players, is asking the North Carolina Attorney General to have a special prosecutor take over. If that happens, CBS News legal analyst Andrew Cohen says the remaining charges could be dropped.
A fresh set of eyes could easily come into this particular case and say, you know what, we don't see things the way Michael Nifong sees them. We don't think the case is as good as Michael Nifong thought it was. We're not going to proceed. That would be a fascinating development. I would not be surprised if it happens. We may be seeing the end game here.
Nifong faces ethics charges. The State Bar Association accuses him of making inflammatory comments about the suspects. The White House today denied that President Bush is planning attacks on Iran or Syria, but CBS News correspondent David Martin reports Iranians stirring up trouble inside Iraq are fair game.
U.S. officials tell CBS News American forces have begun an aggressive and mostly secret ground campaign against networks of Iranians which had been operating with virtual impunity inside Iraq. According to U.S. military figures, 198 American and British soldiers have been killed and more than 600 wounded by advanced explosive devices manufactured in Iran and smuggled in through the southern marshes and along the Tigris River.
In the House today, a vote to jawbone for lower Medicare drug prices.
The yeas are 255. The nays are 170. The bill is passed.
Speaker Nancy Pelosi, CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports.
The measure would require the government to negotiate with drug companies to try to lower the price seniors on Medicare pay for their prescriptions.
We can save billions of dollars.
That's the goal, says Democrat Henry Waxman, though Republican Jim McCrary doesn't buy it.
The bill will not save seniors money. It will not save taxpayers money.
But Democrat Frank Pallone asked why stick with a law that doesn't even let the government try.
This provision that we're repealing never made any sense except to the pharmaceutical industry.
Drug and insurance companies strongly oppose any change, and so does President Bush, who says he'll veto this bill if it passes the Senate. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
A real bell ringer on Wall Street. The Dow rose 43 points to 12,558, its second record close in as many days. Market analyst Hugh Johnson.
In my judgment, the market is being driven by fundamentals, is not overvalued, and is fairly good shape right now.
So what should investors do?
One thing they say in this business is don't fight the trend. I think as long as the trend is up, you want to stay with a fairly meaningful exposure to stocks. The direction still seems to be up.
The Nasdaq closed above 2,500. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Each and every one of us can be infected with influenza, a serious and often deadly infection. In fact, one out of every five Americans will get influenza this season. I'm Dr. Julie Gerberding, Director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and I'd like to encourage everyone who wants to be protected from the flu to get vaccinated this season. This is especially important for people at high risk for influenza-related complications.
A message brought to you by the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
I'm Mark Goldston, Chairman and CEO of Net Zero. We started Net Zero 8 years ago to provide the best access at the best price. The Internet's changed a lot since then, and Net Zero's changed with it. We added Norton antivirus, pop-up blockers, and the fastest surfing available over dial-up, and it all downloads in just 2 minutes. We pride ourselves in providing quality Internet access with prices starting at $9.95 a month. Plus, if you're not satisfied within the first 30 days, we'll give you your money back. Call 1-800-NET-ZERO or visit netzero.com.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. Coming up about half an hour, historian Gray Brecken talks about Nancy Pelosi's background. This hour, we're going to talk about selling America's highways and bridges. That many listeners to the Peter B. Collins Show are actually in their cars or other vehicles rolling down the highway right now, whether you're in Eureka or Monterey or Phoenix or Coos Bay, Oregon. You may look at that smooth interstate and say, wow, I own a piece of this. It's been paid for with my tax dollars and maintained with the federal gasoline tax fund. Ah, but if the fine folks at Goldman Sachs and some Republican collaborators have their way, foreign interests will own the roads and bridges that you think are all American. There's a powerful article in the brand new issue of Mother Jones Magazine, the January-February 2007 issue, entitled The Highwaymen, and its author, Daniel Shulman, who collaborated with Jim Ridgway, who was on our program earlier this week. Dan Shulman joins us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Hello, Dan.
Hey, Peter. How are you?
I'm doing all right. This is a really fascinating and unsettling article.
Well, thanks.
And it really triggered to me a connection between what we heard in December about the huge, perhaps even obscene, bonuses that were being paid to all the partners at Goldman Sachs. They had a banner year last year, and some people, you know, were desperate to buy a new Lamborghini and a new apartment in New York for, you know, seven figures. And they're just loaded with cash. And one of the reasons, certainly not exclusively, but one of the reasons is this municipal division at Goldman Sachs that has been playing all sides of the equation to find willing buyers for America's broke states. And they're buying up, what, the Skyway in Chicago was sold, the Indiana Toll Road has been sold, and I'm just shocked that this has occurred with very little notice.
Yeah, I mean, it's really been happening under the radar. I mean, in the last couple of weeks, you hear about New Jersey thinking about putting its turnpike up for sale or for lease, Pennsylvania, and we're talking about major stretches of highway, important stretches of highway. And it is pretty incredible, but this has really happened thus far pretty quietly.
Well, and I've driven the Chicago Skyway. I went to school and lived in Chicago for many years. The Indiana Toll Road, the New York State Thruway, the Pennsylvania Turnpike, the Ohio Turnpike. And I feel like the tolls I've paid give me a little equity there. And these transactions occur, and the citizens not only don't get any of the capital that's flowing into their states, the people who actually use these roads and have paid for them, but they also face unlimited toll increases on toll roads and bridges in the future.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of one of the more insidious parts of these private deals, because essentially the reasons why the states want to do this is to outsource those difficult political decisions like raising tolls or raising gas taxes, which would be used to fund highways and fund the construction improvement of highways and bridges.
So in mid-September, you chronicle an event that took place in New York at the good old Waldorf Astoria.
Mm-hmm.
300 sharply dressed men and women were carrying on a different sort of diplomacy. You compared it to what's going on at the United Nations. You say these delegates were representatives from white shoe investment banks and consultancies, high-powered lawyers, executives from the world's leading infrastructure companies, and sprinkled here and there federal and state officials who never seemed to go long without being pulled into a conversation and handed a business card. Tell us about Mark Florian, the COO of Goldman Sachs Municipal Finance Division.
Well, Mark is essentially kind of a rock star in this market right now. He's the CEO of Goldman Sachs Municipal Finance Division, as you mentioned, and he's been basically their lead guy on this. He advised the city of Chicago on the privatization of the Skyway, and he also advised the state of Indiana on the privatization of its toll road. Meanwhile, he's been traveling across the country, and I think he told me he's visited between 35 and 40 state houses talking up this idea. So he's been at this for quite some time.
And you also point out in the article that Goldman Sachs plays both sides of the transaction or even more because they get fees from the states for facilitating these transactions. And then they either get a stake or a fee from the buyer.
Well, basically, the way they've gotten involved in this was first in advisory capacity. Number one, they've been out there lobbying across the country, talking to state legislators and pitching this idea. They've done this in Texas. They've done this all over the place. They'll kind of just come in and say, hey, you might be able to get such and such amount of money for your road if you privatized it.
Mm-hmm.
Then they'll come in often and advise the state, as they did in Chicago or Indiana. In the case of Indiana, while they were advising the state, they were also raising their own multi-billion-dollar infrastructure fund, which the sole purpose of that is as a vehicle for investors, private investors, to essentially get a piece of the action.
Mm-hmm.
And a fund like this, you know, its purpose is to get infrastructure for the best price possible. But meanwhile, Goldman is advising these states, supposedly giving them the advice they need to get the best price possible for these roads. And, you know, the third thing was, while the Indiana deal was going through, Goldman's overseas mutual funds were boosting their position in the Macquarie Infrastructure Group, which was half of the consortium that ended up owning the Indiana Toll Road and had previously gone in on the Chicago Skyway, basically the major player in this industry. So they're really making out on all ends of this.
Mm-hmm. And just recently, because of the financial problems of the Golden Gate Bridge District, they've talked about naming rights or permitting Google or somebody else to put an advertising sign up. I think something similar has been contemplated. GEICO tried to buy the rights to the Holland Tunnel. Is that right?
Really? I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, I read something about it in the past week or so. So there is a lot of activity. This kind of started with stadiums and the, you know, movable naming rights that we've seen over the last 10 years or so. And now it's kind of morphed into this, hey, you know, we can sell any asset that we have. And I have this fundamental problem, and gosh, this almost makes me conservative, Dan. But that you know, these assets belong to the citizens of either the United States or the state in which they are located. And I feel like this kind of privatization and sell-off is not only financially risky, but it just seems fundamentally wrong.
I think the bottom line is, you know, are the taxpayers getting a good deal when these transactions go through? And, of course, the state of Indiana says yes. They got $3.8 billion for a 75-year lease on the road. But, you know, another analysis said, you know, if this road was in state hands for that period of time and you instituted, you know, a certain number of toll increases, you could stand to make $11.3 billion. And, you know, that would all be coming back to the taxpayers in other kind of, you know, civic projects. So the problem here is that really there's not much money around at the state or federal level to build new roads or even to improve those that we have right now.
Well, but that's only because there are Republican leaders, mostly Republican governors, who take the no new taxes Kool-Aid pledge.
No, I agree
with
that.
And they create this false choice that, oh, gosh, we can't maintain our roads. We can't possibly consider a tax increase or greater user fees or even the toll increases that the privatizers are going to impose down the road.
Right, and that's kind of that's the really silly part of this. I mean, you know, in Indiana, they hadn't raised the tolls on that road since the mid-'80s. And, you know, the governor's basically said that he didn't feel like there was the political will to do that. So you might as well put it in private hands. But here's the rub. You know, the toll schedule that they put in place in Indiana, because there is one that kind of caps it or gives the illusion of capping it, and that toll schedule is the operators can raise the tolls there by the greater of 2%, the yearly percent increase in the gross domestic product, or the yearly percent increase in the consumer price index. Now, that sounds reasonable, but if you actually do the math, and someone has, and you were to apply that same toll regime to the Holland Tunnel since for the past 70 years, the toll there would be $185 instead of $6, which it is currently. Now, I'm not saying that the operators are going to raise the tolls to that type of level, but, you know, they certainly are going to have quite a bit of flexibility, and those roads are going to be expensive to drive at some point.
You know, the most expensive toll I paid was last year. I was driving in New York, and I think it was the Tappan Zee, $9 one way.
That's
Ouch.
Incredible.
We're going to take a break and return with Daniel Shulman. He writes for Mother Jones Magazine. They're selling your highways and bridges. If you're outraged or you just have a question, call me now, toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, and I won't pay your bridge toll. I'm sorry. You're listening to the new KRXA 540. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares. The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy together are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. Research and common sense show that children learn by playing, and the caring management and staff at Thinker Toys have 37 years of experience helping parents and grandparents choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. So whether you're birthday shopping or simply want to show your love, a gift from Thinker Toys is a way to let someone know you care enough to shop for the very best. With an outstanding selection of Thomas the Tank engines and tracks, puzzles, board games, and children's books, all very reasonably priced, you can't go wrong with a gift from Thinker Toys. So stop by the beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos or the just renovated Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily.
Good Friday afternoon to you. Here's your latest traffic for the Monterey Bay Area. First, there is an accident, Hollister South Ride Road at Blossom Lane. It's an overturned SUV. It is blocking the roadway. CHP is now on the scene. Monterey, an injury accident, northbound 1 at 68. Emergency crews are blocking the left lane. Two vehicles are in the center divide. One is overturned, so you can expect delays there. Some road construction, Monterey County Highway 1 from 1 mile north of Lepkin Creek Road Bridge to 1 mile south of Luxixia. One lane will be closed and a temporary traffic signal will be in place there. Also, Carmel Highway 1 between Point Lobo State University Reserve and Fern Canyon Road, one-way traffic control in effect 8:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. This traffic is brought to you by Welch's Grape Juice. A diet rich in natural antioxidants is good for your heart, and Welch's 100% grape juice is loaded with them. That's traffic, KRXA 540.
We're talking about the sell-off of America's highways and bridges here on the Peter B. Collins Show. My guest is Daniel Shulman, who writes for Mother Jones Magazine. And hey, Dan, I got this brilliant idea. Why don't we retain ownership of the roads and just sell the middle of the road? You know, the median strip? I mean, that's wasted space. It's just ice plant and grass anyway.
You know, they've done that before.
Have they really?
Back out where you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's an interesting story that's kind of a cautionary tale about doing this type of thing. I think back in the late 90s, in Orange County, they contracted with a private operator to build what they call Lexus lanes in the middle of a freeway. So basically toll lanes in the middle of a freeway.
Yeah.
And what ended up happening was the county entered into this contract with them that had a really stringent non-compete clause. The non-compete clause said that the county would not be able to improve the free lanes on either side of this on these toll lanes in order to, you know, protect the private operator's investment.
Mm-hmm.
What ends up happening is that, you know, the county has to buy back the road.
Yeah.
For, you know, quite a bit more than this operator paid for it.
Mm-hmm. I've actually been on the highway you're talking about,
yeah.
And it's bizarre. Because you're driving along, you hit a traffic jam, and you say, oh, I'll just ease over here into the left lane. And it's a, you know, like a $270 fine if you don't have the right transponder to pay the toll for that lane.
Wow.
And so it really does give you a sense of classism on the highways.
Yeah.
Let's take a call. Peter in Chicago joins us. Hey, Peter.
Hi. I have a wonderful topic. I'm really glad this information is getting out. Well, I was curious, does your guest know what the Chicago Skyway was sold for?
Yeah, it was sold for $1.8 billion.
And don't they have to have authorization from, like, the state governments to do this?
Yeah, they do. And in Chicago, there was authorization, and in Indiana, they had to pass legislation in order to do this as well.
Now, Peter, I have been on the Chicago Skyway, and for people who don't know, it connects the very south side of Chicago with Gary, Indiana. And it takes you through some of the ugliest, you know, steel mills, abandoned coal-driven factories, and that sort of thing. And I believe they should pay you to drive on the Chicago Skyway.
I agree with you. You know, I'm beginning to feel like maybe we're starting to become like a third world country. This is the kind of scams that's been going on for years in the Soviet Union, and you'd think people would wise up to these things. There's got to be some people making some really shady money on this.
Well, that's Goldman Sachs. And now let's talk about Mitch Daniels. He came out of the White House after a stint as an executive at Eli Lilly. That's a pharmaceutical company based in Indianapolis. And then he jumped back and won election as governor. And he was pretty excited by the example of the Chicago Skyway on his northwest border. And as you describe in the article, Dan, went on to pass legislation to privatize the Indiana Toll Road.
Absolutely. It's been really one of the cornerstones of his tenure so far. And in Indiana, it's not just the privatization of roads. There's a real privatization agenda going on there. You know, the former mayor of Indianapolis is a guy named Stephen Goldsmith, who was also an advisor early on to the president. And he was, you know, he kind of kicked off the privatization trend there in the 80s, and Daniels was a student of him. Now, so what he's been doing there lately is, you know, talking about privatizing the state lottery, aspects of social services, and elements of the DMV as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm sure there are a lot who would like to privatize the prison systems, and there are efforts nibbling away at that with CCA, Correction Corporation of America, and Wackenhut also mm-hmm. operates private prisons in this country. Now we're joined by Sheldon from Scottsdale. Hello, Sheldon.
Hey, what's going on?
We're talking to you.
Once again, we're talking about really true relevant issues that affect America, and it's brought to you by you, and I appreciate it. I've known about this for quite a while. And just to give you an example, I lived in Kansas City, and there's the I-70 toll road through
mm-hmm.
there.
Yeah.
It starts in Kansas City, Kansas, and ends somewhere out, like, close to Topeka. Well, on that road, I remember my mother saying she was trying to go get a job. She wanted to get a job for the state. Well, she said, I went to go try to get a job at the toll booth, because I thought I could get state benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Well, come to find out, she realized when she went down to apply that that wasn't state at all.
Yeah.
That's private-owned toll road. They bought that stretch of highway a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Well,
what they do is they dig it up. This is amazing, because I used to run a route on I-70 every day. And what they would do, like it was in sections. So a third of the road they would dig up once every year to make it look like they were doing something.
Yeah.
Well, this is the reason why we're tolling you, because we're making the road nice and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's ridiculous. It's private owned, and it basically it's passing the buck so nobody can be sued.
Yeah.
That's what all this privatization is about. And so they keep pushing it on other people's hands. And then it's so hard to get to the person that's actually doing it.
Right. Sheldon, I'm out of time. Thank you for a great call. Good to have you listening. And Daniel, I want to thank you for a great article that you and Jim Ridgway put together. It's in the new issue of Mother Jones Magazine entitled The Highwaymen. And I think it's a must read for every American. Thank you, Daniel.
Nice talking to you, Peter.
Yep. Good to talk to you again. Coming up next, historian Gray Brecken explains the origins of Nancy Pelosi, the new Speaker of the House. Next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
This is Laura Perneta of Perneta Real Estate Advisors. As your licensed real estate broker, our mission at Perneta Real Estate Advisors is excellence and contribution, and our only concern is to promote and protect your interests. Quite simply, if the best result for you means no deal for us, we will immediately tell you. Selling but concerned about tax consequences? As a CPA, I can advise you of the implications of any capital gain. Seeking income-producing property? With a Stanford engineering degree, I have developed cash flow analysis to evaluate various opportunities. If you're buying a home, my promise is to help you find your dream house under the most favorable terms. We at Prunetta Real Estate Advisors are dedicated to our community. We will contribute $250 out of every local transaction to the school of your choice. I am Laura Prunetta of Prunetta Real Estate Advisors. Call me at 753-5310. That's 753-5310. Stop by 1271 North Davis Road in Salinas, across from Applebee's, or browse to PrunettaRealEstate.com.
Condoleezza and the terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network, this week from Washington. Yesterday, Condoleezza woke up and was told she would have to go to a place called the Senate. As she sat down, a Senate aide wished her luck.
Wish you luck.
Thank you very much.
But she knew that this was going to be a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. We all have days like this, days when words don't mean what they seem to mean.
I don't see it as an escalation.
Putting 22,000 new troops?
I would call it, Senator, an augmentation.
Days when nobody believes anything you say.
Madam Secretary, that's just not true.
Well, Senator,
that is not true.
Senator, if you allow me to finish.
Days when you can't even agree on the alphabet.
Senator, I don't think you go to Plan B. You work with Plan A.
But that's not a Plan B. That's a very critical issue here.
You work with Plan A.
But that's what happens on a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. You find yourself saying things that sound silly.
We are more secure, but we're not secure.
The people around you feel the need to repeat themselves.
I have not been told the truth. I have not been told the truth over and over again.
You find yourself thanking people even though they say mean things.
At this stage of the game, I don't think it's going to happen.
Well, thank you, Senator.
When you have a day like that, there's nothing you can do but tell yourself, the Senate may hate me, but there's always the House of Representatives.
This is the craziest, dumbest plan I've ever seen or heard of in my life.
And again, sometimes you just wish you were in Australia.
Okay, this is how I run my business. I put receipts at the front of the shoebox, unpaid invoices go in the back.
But, hon, what happens if you drop the shoebox?
I might cry a little.
You know, there's an easier way to manage your business. Use QuickBooks. It's so simple, you can be up and running in under 15 minutes. With just a few clicks, QuickBooks software lets you send invoices, see who's paid you and who hasn't, and get ready for tax time.
Great. What'll I do with my shoebox?
Put shoes in it? Just throwing it out there.
QuickBooks. Better, faster, simpler. Get it at Staples, Office Depot, or Sam's Club.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance. Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's
475-1200. The Billy Sunshine Show.
Billy Sunshine Show.
With Pilar. With Pilar.
Sunday at 3 o'clock, we're going to be doing something new, something different. Or we'll do the same old thing. Take your phone calls. One thing we know for sure, I'll have something to say. What? I don't know. I never know until I've said it. Find out what's the next thing to come out of my mouth.
The Billy Sunshine Show with Pilar.
Sundays from 3 to 5. 3 to 5.
On AM 540. KRXA.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. and it's History Day.
If you're going to San Francisco, be sure to wear
I've met a lot of gentle people in San Francisco. It's my adopted home city. I've been here for 30 years now, and I didn't make it for the summer of love, but I certainly love it here on the West Coast. And I invited Gray Brecken on this half hour to discuss the history of Nancy Pelosi. Among other books, he's the author of Imperial San Francisco, Urban Power, Earthly Ruin. He's a journalist, television producer, and do you mind the term historian, Gray Brecken?
Well, actually, I'm a geographer.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's what I got my degrees in.
Okay.
But it's the same thing. I'm a historical geographer, so I look at places in time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to ask you to give our listeners a little of the history of politics in San Francisco. Your book covers up through basically the end of World War II and the start of, the Lawrence Livermore and other laboratories. You trace the history of the University of California, the influence of the Hearst family. But I wanted to move a little further forward and talk about the Burton machine that, in turn, created the base for Nancy Pelosi, who's now the Speaker of the House.
Right. Well, that's a little bit beyond my the book itself, but I can
Indeed.
Talk about that some.
Mm-hmm.
And it represents a real change in San Francisco's politics, because before that time, San Francisco was largely a kind of moderate Republican town. The Catholic Church, for example, had a great deal of influence in the city politics, as it did in most American cities, because of the large Irish population and Italian population and such. Of course, Pelosi comes out of that. But in the 60s, all that began to change, dramatically so, and largely because of the protest movements and the Vietnam War and the influx of gays and lesbians who began moving to San Francisco. The politics began to move to the left. It became very progressive and is now, of course, the most progressive of all the major American cities, so much so that the GOP, of course, hates the place.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's a target.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Those dreaded San Francisco values.
Those San Francisco values, and we know what that means.
Oh, do we?
Yeah. We can go into that.
Uh-huh. So, Phil Burton, he
sure.
was a very powerful congressman, didn't rise to the level of speaker. His protege has outdistanced him there,
mm-hmm.
but he wielded tremendous power. And what committee did he chair in the House? Do you recall?
Let's see. Wasn't he on... No, you know, I just can't remember at
yeah.
this point.
Yeah, and I can't summon it myself, but it was like Ways and Means or one of those where he had
That's
a
right.
great deal of power over disbursements in the eras before earmarks.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It was appropriations, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, what he's most remembered for, well, he was just a master politician. Willie Brown comes out of the Burton machine and learned much of his craft. I emphasize craft,
mm-hmm.
from Phil Burton. And Burton wasn't in many ways a very nice guy, but he got a lot of stuff done because he really knew how to work politics. And I admire him because he was one of the really great environmentalists.
Mm.
And my book is essentially, it's an environmental book, and so I admire Burton for that. There's a giant bronze statue of him at Fort Mason overlooking the bay,
mm-hmm.
and it honors him for the work that he did putting together the Golden Gate National Recreation Area, and which is just one of the great national urban national parks anywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm. I go to the Blues Festival there at Fort Mason every September, and mm-hmm. I always have a little sip of something in honor of Phil Burton.
Great. He'd appreciate that, I'm sure. He was a hard drinker.
Mm-hmm. Well, and a very hard-nosed, hardball politician. And I think a lot of people, particularly those who aren't familiar with Nancy Pelosi's background, think of her as a dilettante, a socialite, a junior leaguer. And she is those things, but she also, you know, from her family, the D'Alessandros from Baltimore, father was mayor and congressman, brother a congressman. She, you know, comes by those skills from several sources.
Right. And she learned a lot of it with Phil Burton, but, you know, I think she really was weaned on it in Baltimore, and then she came to San Francisco. She's no pussycat. She's tough-nosed, and I think she learned a lot of that in the Burton machine. Remember, the Burtons were really a political dynasty, like the Hallinans, and quite liberal. And so Phil's brother, John, exerts enormous power in the California legislature.
And let's explain a little bit, because we have some listeners in Oregon and Arizona
who
might not know all of these characters. John Burton is the second of the three brothers. It was Phil, John, and Robert, if I have them in the right order.
Yes.
And now John is the only survivor. And he was a member of Congress, and his brother was so powerful that in the redistricting of 1980, he drew a district for his brother that included the Democratic strongholds of Marin County and portions of San Francisco, and it was a bizarre configuration, but a very safe seat for Johnny, who served, I think, about five terms before he resigned and checked into rehab.
That's right. Yeah, he was pretty burned out, actually. He used to be my congressman, and I went to one of his get-togethers with the neighbors, and he was quite checked out at that time. But he was very, very powerful, mm-hmm. and I generally went along with his politics, but he was nearly a cinder at that time. He actually came back and had a sort of second career.
Oh, indeed.
And I think did a lot of good work.
He did. He confined himself to state politics, and he rose to be a state senator, and he ran the Senate until term limits forced him out just a few years back.
Mm-hmm.
And I do agree. He accomplished a lot. His progressive agenda was something that I always could support. Sometimes his methods were a little bit bare-knuckled. And as an individual, John Burton is one of the most obnoxious and profane people you would ever meet in public life.
Yes, and he's very much... Phil was the same way.
Yeah, I never met Phil.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
But, and then there's Sala.
Sala was Phil's wife.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And when Phil died in office, Sala took over.
And she served about a term and a half, is that right?
I think that's it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then she died, and it was on her deathbed that she anointed Nancy Pelosi.
That's right.
Tell us a little bit about that, because I believe it was a 9-way race to succeed Sala Burton after her death in the special election. And Spencer Michaels, who is at KQED Television and is a correspondent for the PBS NewsHour.
That's right.
He did a lengthy piece and pulled out some footage of a candidate forum that he had presided over, moderated back in that race. That would have been about, 1985?
I mean, I think it was back around then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was working at KQED then myself.
Oh, you were?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So tell us what you recall about that race. Harry Britt was the leader of the gay community and was kind of presumed to be the candidate who was going to win that race, and Pelosi defeated him.
Yeah, and that was a very interesting race because Harry Britt was the kind of designated successor to Harvey Milk after he was killed in office in the assassination of Milk and Moscone in City Hall by Dan White, the disgruntled police cop.
Mm-hmm. And supervisor, yeah.
So Harry Britt was gay, and that wasn't so much a problem to the elite in San Francisco as that he was also a socialist,
mm-hmm.
an avowed socialist. So they were very upset about that because it just wouldn't do to have an out-and-out socialist running, you know, representing San Francisco, as liberal as it is. And so they put forward Pelosi at that time. And as you said, the race was very, very tight. It was kind of a squeaker, and she managed to pull it off.
Mm-hmm. And she had been a chair of the California State Democratic Party, so she had a very good fundraising list. And, of course, she and her husband are independently wealthy, and so they were able to fund a campaign. Although money was not necessarily the determining factor. It wasn't as if TV advertising swung that race.
You know, I don't remember that well. I mean, although the book is largely about San Francisco's elites and the way that they maintain their power, and that has to do with money and making more of it.
And so as you look at Nancy Pelosi, who does she owe for her propulsion into national office?
Well, again, my memory here is short, and the book stops before Pelosi's time. It certainly had a lot to do with her own family sort of pushing her, because she wasn't initially, all as I understand it, all that interested in going in. She was pretty happy being a, you know, a San Francisco matron and a housewife and a mother and all. And so I'm not sure. Do you remember?
I don't exactly. No, and you know, in many respects, her political base was the state party that she helped fundraise for. And in that era, we had Alan Cranston, who was a three-term senator, and the Democratic Party was pretty much in control of. Well, let me think. Sacramento was under Duke Majan, but the legislature was still heavily Democratic.
That's right.
And so in many respects, I feel like she has many people who would claim to have been a mentor or an influence on her. And I think she's very friendly with all the people who have helped her get where she is. At the same time, she has that ability to say no to her friends.
Oh, yes, she certainly has that. I mean, anybody who mistakes Pelosi as being soft and, you know, well, I can't say not, she's feminine, but I mean, to take that in any way as representing softness or weakness in any way, they're going to be very mistaken. I think she's one of the most interesting people around right now. It's going to be very interesting watching her, particularly as Bush provokes a constitutional crisis, as he really began to do a couple of nights ago. I think we're headed for that, and I think she's up for it. I hope she is.
It seems to be the case. I think if she were free to represent her own views at all times, we would see a much more strident and confrontational Nancy Pelosi. If you recall the efforts that she took on to fight her Democratic president during the Clinton administration over the China issue. She was a longtime proponent of human rights improvements in China and tried to link that to the annual renewal of most favored nation trade status for China between the U.S. And that nation. And Clinton, of course, got tired of the annual event. And I believe it was in his third year that he basically shifted away from this annual renewal and went into what he called constructive engagement. And at that time, Pelosi was representing Chinese-American activists from San Francisco, but also the progressive community that cared about what happened at Tiananmen Square and that really wanted to try to foster better human rights conditions in China. And she was unrelenting in that battle. She ultimately lost it to the Clinton administration. But she was not afraid to stand up to Democrats, which I found to be a very interesting characteristic.
Yes.
We're going to take a break and continue. Gray Brecken is with us. The book that we've been mentioning is Imperial San Francisco, Urban Power, Earthly Ruin. It's out in softcover now from University of California Press. And it's a fascinating look at the history of this great city. If you have a question or a comment, you want to talk about your perception of Nancy Pelosi, give us a call right now. Lines are open for you. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. More in a moment right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Here's your Friday going home traffic for the Monterey Bay area. First in Union City, eastbound Alvarado Niles Road on ramp to northbound 880. There's an accident, two vehicles. Hollister, South Side Road at Blossom Lane, there's an accident. An overturned SUV is blocking the roadway. CHP is on the scene there. Monterey, northbound 1 at 68, there's an accident. Emergency crews are blocking the left lane. Two vehicles are in the center divide. One is overturned. You can expect delays there. Construction work, Santa Cruz, the Morrissey Boulevard exit from southbound Highway 1 is closed for 3 to 4 months of road work. Motorists can take Soquel Avenue or the Ocean Street off-ramp to access Morrissey. On-ramp also closed, but the Fairmont Avenue off-ramp to the Fairmont Avenue on-ramp to southbound 1 does remain open. Traffic is brought to you by Welch's 100% grape juice. It has powerful antioxidants just like red wine, and that's good for your heart. Drink a glass of delicious Welch's grape juice every day.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 9 minutes away from the hour. We're taking a look at the political past of Nancy Pelosi, the brand-new Speaker of the House of Representatives, and continuing as the Congresswoman from San Francisco. Our guest is Gray Brechin, B-R-E-C-H-I-N, and one of his books, Imperial San Francisco, is now out in softcover from University of California Press. And, Gray, when I talk about Pelosi, in the interest of full disclosure, I like to let my listeners know that I have known her since she first went into Congress and first knew her as an interview subject. Mm-hmm. And then when I was not working in radio in the mid-90s, she asked me to be a consultant to one of her political campaigns. She had only won with 74% of the vote in the preceding cycle. And we ran a campaign and helped her get up to 84%. And it was really interesting to get to know her outside of the office a little bit and to see how she operates. She and I share a love of chocolate. And I think one of her grandkids spilled it that she eats ice cream for breakfast.
Uh-huh.
And it's also interesting, I think, just to see how she operates in concert with her husband, who is no shrinking violet, but manages to play the role of a political spouse very well.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a pretty interesting team. And the other thing I would say is that a lot of people think that the leadership and particularly the speakership just kind of fell out of the sky. But in 1999, she held a meeting of supporters and staff people at the Presidio in San Francisco. And at that time, she announced she was going to try to move up the ladder in the Democratic ranks. And ultimately, her goal was the speakership. So it took her 7 years, and she had to get Dick Gephardt out of the way. But it was a pretty fascinating rise, and pretty much went according to her plan.
Well, she's extremely ambitious, and she knows how to do that. And again, I think that that probably goes back to watching Phil Burton operate.
Mm-hmm.
And also Willie Brown, too. I mean, Willie Brown is certainly astute at getting where he wants to go.
Yes, he. And by the way, for people who aren't quite familiar, Willie Brown was the most recent mayor of San Francisco. And before that, he spent about 30 years running the lower house, the assembly in Sacramento, with an iron fist. And he managed to avoid legal complications, even though I heard you refer to him as crafty, Gray.
Absolutely.
And he was.
I could refer to him in a lot of other ways, too.
Well, go ahead.
Well, I mean, Willie Brown was an amazing politician, and he really rebuilt a 19th century political machine. I didn't think it was possible to do it, but as you probably know, at the early in the 20th century and in the 19th century, the Southern Pacific pretty much ran California
mm-hmm.
as its fiefdom, and Nevada as well, too. As many of the western states were largely run by the railroad. And Willie Brown, while he was Speaker of the Assembly, was also a private attorney representing first Southern Pacific and then Catullus, the land company that was spun off
yes.
of Southern Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a remarkable conflict of interest that he was not called upon. And there were many such deals being done. It's amazing he managed to squeak through.
Well, and the FBI set up a sting around a phony shrimp operation that wanted to relocate to California. And other people got caught up in it and were found accepting bribes and were indicted and prosecuted, and a couple went to jail, and Willie Brown just skated right along.
Well, that's right. And, you know, my book is really largely about the dark side of San Francisco through its history, but it's about the dark side of all great cities, how they really operate and for whom they operate. And the thesis is really that a very small number of people, the elites, essentially run the cities for their own advantage, and that that has enormous social and particularly environmental consequences. They reach out and they destroy the land around them, and most people are not the wiser for this. I just use San Francisco as an example of how all great cities operate, and that cities are built upon violence. And this is one of the things that particularly concerns me now. The book is being reissued. It came out 7 years ago, and it was so successful that the press decided to reissue it. So I wrote a new introduction about how the world events that we've seen in the last 7 years since the book was published are borne out or explained by the thesis of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is the violence that is inherent in the economy of the Bay Area, that is Silicon Valley, which is largely weapons. It's based on weaponry. And again, this is something that is historic with cities. But it's something that very few people around here understand, is the immense amounts of federal money that come into the Bay Area and support the economy for weapons contracts.
Yeah, that's very well put. And there was the FMC plant that is now United Defense in San Jose, which is an offshoot of the Carlyle Group that some people know about. Ed in Aptos wants to join us. Hello, Ed. You're on the air.
Hi. I was just, it's not San Francisco, but kind of, my memory was that Willie Brown's predecessor as Speaker of the Assembly was Jess Unruh.
That's right.
And for the people that don't know California politics, Jess Unruh was the politician that he was saying that money is the mother's milk of politics.
Well, and didn't he famously say that if you can't take their money, drink their booze, and screw their women, and then vote against them, you're not a politician? Something like that, Gray?
I think that was Jess
Unruh. That's right. And so Jess is... You know, amongst maybe other states have politicians as illustrious as the California politicians, but we have a pretty good group of politicians.
Yeah, you're right about that.
And so, just because they're Democrats doesn't mean you can't keep your shouldn't you can take your eyes off of them.
Oh, you're
not
absolutely
at all.
Right about that.
Okay, well,
thank you, Ed.
Where did he come in? Am I right in my assumption that he was the that he was a predecessor to Willie?
Yes, he was a speaker for many years, isn't that right?
Yeah, he was in there for a long time, in the 60s, I guess. I kind of remember him from college a little bit, but I can't.
I think
I just can't lay my. I wasn't a student of politics as much as I am now. So
I believe Willie Brown took over in the mid 70s, and that there may have been one speaker in between UNRRA and him. But
yeah, it was what a group.
I think UNRRA was a speaker during Pat Brown's term, wasn't he, as governor?
That sounds right. Yeah. All right, gentlemen, thank you very much for the call. Ed, Gray Brecken, thanks for joining us today. Again, the book Imperial San Francisco, Urban Power, Earthly Ruin, out in softcover from University of California Press. Great to talk with you.
Same here. Thanks, Peter.
All righty.
Okay, bye-bye.
Coming up next, our weekly visit with his Bradness, Brad Friedman, Election Protection, and watching your votes, making sure they count. He'll join us next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the old Granary building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Another strange twist in Raleigh, North Carolina. CBS News correspondent Jim Krasula reports the district attorney is asking to be relieved of his most controversial case.
His lawyer says Mike Nifong is stepping aside from the Duke LaCrosse sexual assault case because he doesn't want to be a distraction, and he wants to make sure the accuser gets a fair trial. Nifong's controversial handling of the case has led to ethics charges being filed against him. Legal observers here in North Carolina expect the case will be further delayed if the state attorney general agrees to appoint a special prosecutor.
The most serious charge, rape, was dropped last month. One of the defense attorneys says they're all delighted by Nifong's recusal. Authorities say two missing child cases were solved at once today when they raided a home in Kirkwood, Missouri. John Mills of CBS television affiliate WKMOV is on that story.
Police and the FBI have an apartment sealed off right now. This is the crime scene where investigators say the 13-year-old boy, Ben Onby, who was kidnapped Monday afternoon, was found alive. And remarkably, a boy who was 11 years old when he was kidnapped more than 4 years ago from a neighboring county was found alive and apparently in good condition in the same apartment.
The tenant in that apartment is identified as Michael Devlin, 41 years old. He's charged right now with one count of first-degree kidnapping. The boy who disappeared in 2002 is Sean Hornbeck. His parents have devoted themselves to the cause of missing people. President Bush's pointed remarks Wednesday night about Iran and Syria meddling in Iraq led to speculation that Iraq's troublesome neighbors might come under attack. The White House denies that, and Defense Secretary Gates offered reassurance to Congress today.
We believe that we can interrupt these networks that are providing support through actions inside the territory of Iraq, that there is no need to attack targets in Iran itself.
Condoleezza Rice continued to sell the new strategy today.
The Secretary of State is optimistic about Iraq.
There are many things that looked impossible one day, and not too long after that, they looked inevitable. And I think that's what we think can still happen in Iraq.
In an interview with CBS Radio News, Rice said President Bush has no choice other than to send in more troops.
When our experts took a look at their plan, decided that they didn't really have the capability to do it. So I don't see a good alternative.
Because the Iraqis can't do it alone.
I've heard people say, well, just let them do it. If they, of course, don't have the capability, then you're setting them up for failure and us as well.
Rice is heading now for the Middle East. Howard Everenstein, CBS News, Washington.
Big day on Wall Street. Even though the price of oil rose a dollar to $52.99 a barrel, stocks were higher. The Dow Industrials up 41 points to close at a new high, 12,556. This is CBS News.
Now, you have a very unique accounting system for your boutique.
Yep, I designed my own spreadsheet.
Wow, looks complicated.
That's why I have a cheat sheet for my spreadsheet.
That is one big cheat sheet.
That's just the index.
You know, there's an easier way to manage your business.
Really?
Yeah, QuickBooks. You can be up and running in under 15 minutes. With just a few clicks, QuickBooks software lets you send invoices, see who's paid and who hasn't. It even makes tax time a cinch.
I'm switching.
Great.
Can you help me fold this back up?
I doubt it. QuickBooks. Better, faster, simpler. Get it at Staples, Office Depot, or Sam's Club.
Sunday at 9, 8 Central on VH1. 10 Surreal Life All-Stars, including Vanilla Ice, Emmanuel Lewis, Sandra Peppa Denton, and Brigitte Nielsen, must put their fame to the test.
I feel that I'm famous.
Who will make it to the A-list, the B-list, or no list at all?
We're going to find out just how famous you really are.
The Surreal Life Fame Games. It's a fight to the famousest. An all-new episode Sunday at 9, 8 Central, only on VH1.
Controversy over a wolf hunt in the Northwest. CBS News correspondent Stephen Kaufman has the story.
The howling of a gray wolf, possibly an endangered sound in Idaho. To the wild applause of 300 hunters, Governor Butch Otter said he wants hunters to kill about 550 wolves, leaving only 100 across the state. Let's not overreact, says Suzanne Stone with Defenders of Wildlife.
We need to look at the most recent scientific statistical data about wolves and about their impacts and make reasoned decisions on how we work to conserve the species, not try to eradicate them once again.
Stephen Kaufman, CBS News, Spokane.
What would you do if you saw a man wearing a black ski mask going into a jewelry store? The same thing a bystander in Middlesboro, Kentucky did. You'd call police. They surrounded the place and arrested the man, only to learn later that Ron Hampton is just a guy who works outdoors and wears a ski mask. He was at the store to visit his brother, the manager. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Brenda Coates is a real GEICO customer, not a paid celebrity. So to help tell her story, we hired Mr. Burt Bacharach.
Last year, I was rear-ended by a GEICO customer.
I was hit in the rear.
First thought in my mind was about that funny lizard.
Lizard licks his eyeball.
I was so impressed with how they handled my claim, I switched.
I hope I'll never get hit in the rear again.
GEICO. Real service, real savings.
Let's kick back for the moment. Let your worries drift away, cause here we're living for today. Let's go out back tonight.
Think of the day. Go out back tonight, where fresh R.E. tuna is seasoned, seared, and served on a bed of crisp romaine. Start the new year fresh. Leave your worries at the door.
Let's go out back tonight.
Tonight, let go.
Life will still be there tomorrow.
Go out back.
Continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm still your humble host, Peter B. Are you ready for Brad? Ready? Steady, go. Every Friday we make time for Brad Friedman. He's the proprietor of bradblog.com, leading defender of voters in America, trying to protect us from corrupt politicians, voting machines that can be hacked and are generally unreliable, and trying to put the D back into our democracy.
Ready, steady, go.
We've got a lot to talk about this hour to update you on various issues, but you're always welcome to call with comments, questions, or news of your own. The lines are open for you, toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. You can always email me, Peter, at peterbcollins.com. I read them all, don't get to answer them all, but please send me your comments, story ideas, and interview subjects you'd like to hear on this program. Brad Friedman, how you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing all right. How are you, my friend?
Oh, I'm not too bad. It's been a long week, and, watching the president spin and bob and weave and disappoint so many people is a little hard to take.
It's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon.
Yeah, right.
That's a Wrong show.
It is the wrong show.
Wrong show.
So there's a lot of activity at Bradblog, too. We'll see how much of it we can cover in this coming hour. I wanted to start off with the situation in Florida, because you've been updating us frequently on the very close race, 366 votes separated Christine Jennings from the Republican Buchanan. And he was seated under protest. And what's the current status now of that contested congressional election in Florida 13?
Well, we had a story on this at bradblog.com earlier this week. The and I should say it's a 369-vote margin.
Okay.
I don't want anybody to accuse you of stealing three votes for Christine Jennings.
And I wouldn't want to ever undermine your precision.
So 369 votes stand between them, of course, with some 18,000 votes having disappeared entirely on those ES&S touchscreen machines. As you mentioned, she's down there contesting the election in state court, and meanwhile, up in Congress, she has also filed a contest under the Federal Elections Federal Contested Elections Act. And in the meantime, the opponent, the Republican Vernon Buchanan, has been seated provisionally by Nancy Pelosi. Well. This allows the court case to continue down there in Florida as it is while they do an investigation up in the House. And by the way, there's a total of five elections this year that are being challenged under that Federal Contested Elections Act in the House.
Okay.
Our friend Clint Curtis amongst them, by
That's
the way.
That's right, in Florida.
In Florida. As a matter of fact, four out of the five are from Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Go figure. In any case, this week the head of the House Administrative Committee, Juanita Millender McDonald, had sent a letter down to the state court letting them know that she would certainly appreciate it if they would release the source code, which a judge just before the end of the year, literally the last work day of the year, December 29th, on a Friday in the afternoon, came down with his decision that the plaintiffs down in the case would not be allowed to see the source code for those ES&S voting machines, which simply astounded me, and I know astounded the plaintiffs. And so Juanita Millender McDonald, head of the U.S. House Administrative Committee, sent a letter to the appellate court saying, we sure would appreciate if you would release the information so that the plaintiffs could, in fact, review this material as they need to be able to do in order to make their case. Now, she, what was interesting was that she didn't say it out loud, but in fact, the House would have subpoena power over that source code, and they could, in fact, ask for it themselves via subpoena in their own investigation. So I sort of saw this as her putting the courts on notice that, hey, we're going to get that source code. You know, either way, it would be nice if you would allow the plaintiffs to have it. Well, ES&S, in reply this week, sent a letter to the court, not a letter, filed a motion calling on them to strike Millender McDonald's letter, saying that it was meant to prejudice the court against their client, the Republican, saying that what she was doing was essentially partisan and meant to bias the court in favor of the Democrat Christine Jennings. I mean, it was just ridiculous. Now, mind you, you'll recall back last summer out here in the contested Busby-Bilbray race when, in fact, the U.S. House of U.S. House Administration Committee, then under Republican rule, sent a similar letter demanding that the court in California in that contested election dismiss the contest. And, in fact, when the court received that letter, they cited that letter as their reason for dismissing the case, or at least deciding against the contesters. So, you know, it's the tables have turned now with the Democrats in the House, and frankly, it's an absurd decision. In fact, ES&S has moved to not just strike the letter entirely and act as if the court never saw it, but they've also made motions to throw out all of the other motions that have been made, including the appeal itself by the plaintiffs.
Well, I'm taking a look here at the PDF that's conveniently linked there and the story at BradBlog, and this is the actual response from ESNS, and they say that the letter from Millinder McDonald must be stricken because she has no standing to participate in the review of the trial court's order, and because the response itself is an improper attempt to influence this court by interjecting non-record matters into the proceeding and otherwise fails to comply with appellate rules. Now,
yeah,
that's really remarkable, because ESNS is claiming that the Congress of the United States does not have the standing to investigate a questionable election of a member.
Well, I guess they're not saying they don't have the right to investigate it. They're saying that they don't have the right to stick their nose into this particular state case. Now, my understanding is that it's not unusual, you know, for to send a friend of the court briefs, if you will, from interested parties, and certainly the Congress is an interested party, because if Florida decides, essentially the plaintiffs down there are asking for a revote in the election, and if there is no revote in the election, then the Congress will likely have to take action, and they'll have to decide whether they should order a revote, although actually it's not clear that they can actually order a revote. What they would do is declare the seat vacant, as I understand it, which in effect would force a special election down there to fill the seat, and so you would effectively get your revote in that election.
Mm-hmm. And so it appears that ESNS is pulling out every possible legal argument they can, and their core focus here appears to be to protect the source code.
Well, that's right. They are doing everything they can to make sure that the voters of Florida are not allowed to see exactly what happened in their election. And this is, you know, it just underscores the problem with these voting machines, as if we need it underscored again. Here you go. You've got a question about the election. You've got a question about the way the voting machines worked. And, in fact, even ESNS's own expert on the stand in that case, their only expert on the stand in the case, admitted that were it not for problems with the voting machines, Christine Jennings would have won the election. And yet, the judge down there, William L. Gary is his name, decided that the company, ESNS's trade secrets, proprietary trade secrets, took precedence over the Florida voters' right to know exactly what happened in that election. I mean, it's simply mind-blowing.
Yeah.
But what else is new in this particular game?
Well, we're going to take a break, and as we return with Brad, he has some interesting comments from Christine Jennings about the voter protection or voter integrity movement, and we'll hear about that, and also the latest in District 50, the challenge to the special election that occurred last summer between Francine Busby and Brian Bilbray. We'll talk about that, and just in case you're going to wander over to another radio station, we will be giving juicy tidbits about Ann Coulter's criminal problems because of her voter registration. So maybe that'll hook you to stay tuned. You can call us if you have a comment or a question. 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. More with Brad Friedman coming up on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540.
If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
The days of wine and roses.
The fastest growing disease in America is addiction. It's time we talk about it openly. This is Sheila Gale. Join me Saturday afternoons from 4 to 5 for 12-Step Talk Uncensored, where we deal with addiction. It's about time.
that wasn't there before.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Here's your latest traffic for the Monterey Bay Area for your Friday going home. San Andro, southbound 101 after Alvarado Road. It's a disabled vehicle. A stalled motorhome is partially blocking the roadway, and the CHP is on the scene. Construction work, Santa Cruz, the Morrissey Boulevard exit from southbound Highway 1, has closed for 3 to 4 months of road work. Motorists can take Soquel Avenue or the Ocean Street off-ramp to access Morrissey. Watsonville, Highway 152 between Highway 1 and Beverly Drive North. There is construction there. Caltrans will be doing roadway upgrades in various areas with work continuing all the way into the fall. Going home now, southbound 101 is slow between Monterey and Carmel, and eastbound Highway 25 slows out of Gilroy into Hollister. Welch's 100% grape juice has powerful antioxidants, just like red wine, and that's good for your heart. Drink a glass of delicious Welch's 100% grape juice.
And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. Lines are open if you'd like to talk with me and Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. And, Brad, just before the break, we were talking about that contested race in Florida between Vern Buchanan and Christine Jennings. And on the Brad blog, you have some interesting comments from the Democratic candidate herself. And it was kind of like she's saying, you told me so.
Yeah, it was very interesting. In the interview with her that Melinda Hennenberger ran over at HuffPo this week with Christine Jennings, she said, very interesting comment. It was like the last paragraph of the interview over there. She says, those people with the Sarasota Alliance for Fair Elections, I used to pat them on the back at Democratic meetings, but I had no idea. The vote is the great equalizer in this country, and when we've lost that, we've really lost something. She was referring to the Sarasota Alliance for Fair Elections, or SAFE, as they call themselves down there. They are a great election integrity group down in Florida. Matter of fact, Susan Pinchon, one of the members, I think she might have been the founder, was actually in the HBO documentary Hacking Democracy.
All right, yeah.
And It's interesting to hear Jennings say this as the interview describes her staying, I think, at a Holiday Inn somewhere up there in D.C. outside the Beltway instead of working out of her Capitol Hill office, where she really should, because she would have, by all accounts, she would have won that election in Florida's 13th district had the machines not malfunctioned as they did. So she now says, "Geez, you used to pat them on the back and tell them how cute they were, but now I get it." And so, you know, I'm just wondering, how long is it going to take for the rest of the Democratic Party to get it and to make real changes? And I mean real changes, because they're, you know, a lot of them are putting together election reform legislation to come up. I've seen some of those bills from several different Congress members as they're being drafted. Some of them have a lot of good stuff in them. But still, it seems like they are afraid to simply come out and say, enough is enough. We need to, A, get rid of touchscreen systems, period. DRE touchscreen systems, whether they have a paper trail or not, it doesn't matter, because we know now, definitively, the paper trail does not work. That's the first step. And then if you are going to continue using electronic optical scan machines to count these votes, then you need to have an appropriate audit that gives you a 99% certainty that the result reported by the machines is actually the result intended by the voters. So all of the legislation that I have seen so far in draft format is, gets right up there to around the edges of banning these DRE voting machines, but none of them yet have been able to have the stones, if you will, to come right out and say, these damn things don't work, let's get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, we'll
now,
see.
Brad, one Democrat who clearly does get it is the new Secretary of State here in California, Deborah Bowen. You and I are quite familiar with her. She was a state senator and ran for this post, at least in part, promising to clean up the mess that Bruce McPherson had left. And you and I both talked before the show, and we can't remember exactly whether we talked about this last week.
Yes.
So if it is a repeat, just ignore that.
No, it's actually, I went back and checked it during the break. You're right. It broke Monday.
Yeah.
I had known about it last week, thus my confusion.
Okay.
But I couldn't release it until Monday. And it's a huge story, even though it seems like years ago now, even though it was just Monday.
Right. She made a key appointment.
Oh, boy. And how? On Monday, she was sworn in. Deborah Bowen was sworn in. And, you know, I had previously run an interview with her when she said she was going to look at these voting machines again that McPherson had certified before her, look at them from top to bottom, that she felt the so-called voting machine sleepovers were illegal. And what she didn't say at the time, but I broke on Monday, was her replacement for this very partisan woman who had the job before, Susan Lapsley. She was the one, by the way, responsible for ensuring that the House swore in Brian Bilbray.
Right. She sent that election fax prior to certification.
That's right. Well, mm-hmm. Guess what? There's a new sheriff in town, and she has appointed Lowell Finley from Voter Action to be the new Deputy Secretary of State for Voting System Technology and Policy. You'll recall Lowell Finley and Voter Action. They are the group, and he is their lead attorney, the founder of that group, who filed suit against the state of California, calling on them to get rid of the Diebold touchscreen machines. They filed suits in Colorado, in Pennsylvania, in Ohio, in Florida, in New Mexico, and now Lowell Finley is going to be in charge of California's voting system technology and policy. An ardent watchdog of electronic voting, I can't stress how huge it is that he is now going to be in charge of this testing and certification for the state of California.
The studio audience just went bonkers.
It can't be overstated how important this appointment is and how incredibly exciting it is. Remember, they've still got a suit now against the state of California. So, in essence, he's, for the moment, suing himself. But I think with the plaintiffs now changing, because McPherson was the lead plaintiff, I suspect the disposition of that suit will change as well. But, man, this is huge news for not just the state of California, but as we've talked about many times, the entire country, because what goes on here in California with these voting machines affects the entire rest of the country.
Yeah, well, it is a powerful nomination, and we've got to get the secretary on. We haven't talked to her since she's been sworn in, installed in Sacramento, and I think it's going to really make a difference.
Well, let's be clear. She wasn't installed. She actually won the election, unlike her predecessor, McPherson, who actually was installed.
That's true. He was appointed to fill out the term for a corrupt Democrat named Kevin Shelley.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what. Bowen said in her speech, her inauguration speech, that Kevin Shelley, when it came to voting machine security, was absolutely right, and that she plans to kick it up about five notches from where he was.
All right. We're going to take a break and continue with Brad Friedman. You want to join us? Lines available. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. As we continue, we're going to talk about the cases of a couple of right-wing merchants of slime of the female variety. Can you say Ann Coulter? Yeah. We'll talk about that coming up.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Just arrived. It's Carmel, a treasure. A first, a combination calendar history book with souvenir maps archiving Carmel today. Entirely rendered in watercolors by Lisa Bryan. Stories, illustrations of local businesses, dogs, and a brief history of Carmel's first bohemians, including today's places and characters of note. This brilliant calendar and book combo captures the charm of Carmel. A special gift, now available at Lisa's studio in Court of the Fountains and other bookstores and gift shops in Carmel.
Aloha, I'm Jay.
And I'm Ginger.
And we would like to invite you to our family restaurant at Pizza Paradise, serving the biggest, best, and boldest pizzas from our Marina location at 215 Reservation Road. It's in the Marina Village Shopping Center across from Wells Fargo Bank. Try one of our specialty pizzas like the Ginger's Island Paradise, or for the meat lovers, a Meet Me in Paradise. We're open Tuesday through Sunday and offer a banquet room for up to 80 people. We deliver to Marina and CSUMB.
Call 582-9149.
It's a Pizza Paradise.
That's 582-9149.
ZNS Auto Sales in Monterey, family-owned for 30 years, is where partnership works. Whether you're a first-time buyer and need a safe economy car, or looking for a truck or SUV or a classic, they have it all. Call ZNS before you make that final decision. ZNS open every day at 1179 Del Monte Boulevard between the Navy Postgraduate School and Lake Elistero. High-quality used cars at the very best prices. ZNS Auto Sales, where partnership works.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in Soquel Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose-leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in a friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive and Porter Street in Soquel.
It's Behind the Wheel, the Consumer New Car Review. I'm Peter B. Collins. This week, I've been behind the wheel of the 2007 Saturn View Green Line, a midsize five-passenger SUV with hybrid technology. This is a vehicle that General Motors can really brag about, especially the sticker price and operating costs. The power plant features a 2.4-liter four-cylinder gas engine mated with an electric motor generator combo, and a pretty cool gizmo that I don't understand adjusts the mix of gas and electric power for fuel savings. Not only that, my demo's an all-wheel drive and passed our hill climb test with ease. It's roomy inside, has a good accessory package, and attracted many compliments. Test drive the Saturn View before you buy a Honda, Toyota, or Ford hybrid. By the numbers, the 2007 Saturn View Greenline Hybrid gets about 27 miles in the city, 32 on the highway, and stickers in California for about $23,000. Rolls on. America can right-wing merchants of slime prosper and intimidate people who disagree with them. We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Brad Friedman with us from bradblog.com. And we promised you a little cheesy stuff, and Ann Coulter always delivers.
And she certainly does.
She's that loudmouth, leggy blonde in a little black dress who utters some of the most contemptible comments and is invited back repeatedly.
Yeah, she is. And you know what's funny is that with all of the reporting that I do at BradBlog and all the extraordinary things we're seeing going on with our electoral system, boy, as soon as I run a story that has to do with Ann Coulter, it's like if I want people to pay attention to the problems with our election system, run a story on Ann Coulter and how she's apparently committed voter fraud down in the state of Florida.
And that'll get people's attention, huh?
It sure does. Hits go through the roof. Even the progressive blogosphere, who I can't sometimes get to give attention at all to my stories, boy, mention Ann Coulter, they're all over it. Go figure.
So what is the latest on her voter registration issues in Palm Beach?
All right, well, the latest is, as you recall, last year, almost a year ago, she had, it turns out that she apparently moved down to Palm Beach, Florida. She filled out a new voter registration application, and incredibly, she put her realtor's address on the voter registration form, which would be a third-degree felony, punishable by something like 5 years in prison, or 3 years in prison, $5,000, something like that. She went about denying it, saying that folks like me who were reporting this were crazy, so I had to one-up her and actually get her registration form, put it on BradBlog, which shows, in fact, she used the wrong address. And she did so knowingly and purposely. And since then, the election supervisor of elections down there in Palm Beach, Arthur Anderson, has promised to investigate and refer the issue to the prosecutors if appropriate. And, in fact, it is appropriate. He sent her a letter asking for explanation. She refused to give an explanation. She lawyered up down there. Her lawyer admitted, in fact, she used the wrong address. And so now the election director has gone about referring it to authorities. And back in November of last year, he actually asked the Palm Beach Police Department to give him a report on the legal issues here. And what the Palm Beach police have discovered is that aside from the third-degree felony that she would have committed when she put the wrong address on her registration form, and aside from the first-degree misdemeanor that she is would be guilty of because she actually voted in the wrong place, knowingly voted in the wrong place, it turns out she also committed felony fraud when she signed up for a driver's license down in the state of Florida and again put the wrong address purposely on her driver's license. Once again, her poor realtor, who, by the way, knew nothing about all of this. So, you know, she's claimed, her attorneys claim that Coulter has stalkers. She's got to be careful with her identity.
Well, sure, she's insulted a lot of progressives in this country by suggesting if you disagree with her, it's an act of treason. She's called for, you know, the New York Times to be blown up the way Timothy McVeigh did the federal building in Oklahoma City. I mean, she said a lot of hateful things, and she probably has good cause to worry about people who wish her ill.
Yeah, and given that, wasn't it thoughtful of her to give the address of her real estate agent? I mean, you know, if somebody wanted to get back at Ann Coulter and do something, you know, blow up her house or something, you know, just well, go up and blow up my realtor's agent's house,
but
I guess.
How do we know that the agent didn't say, you know, thanks for buying this house through me. I got a hefty commission. I've got your back, and I'd even take a bullet for you, Ann.
Because if the agent says that, she's singing a different tune now. When the when the story first came out, and in fact we checked with her, she had known nothing about Coulter having done that, and she was absolutely amazed that Coulter had put her address on her voter registration form.
And it's the realtor's home, not her office.
That's right. It's her home. And, I mean, this story, frankly, is sealed up at this point from top to bottom. She done it. She's busted. And now that we also see that she committed driver's license fraud, you can add that as a second felony. So far, if you're keeping track, we've got two third-degree felonies, one first-degree misdemeanor, and the only problem right now is finding anyone to prosecute. Because as it turns out, and we've got the full police report on Bradblog, just a couple stories from the top. I broke this yesterday. You can read the police report yourself. Apparently, because these crimes seem to have happened outside of the town of Palm Beach, this police department says it's not their jurisdiction. It's been referred to the state prosecutor now, as well as the state sheriff. So we will see what happens. But people are watching her, and if you ask me, she's dead to rights at this point. She done it. And the best she can do is cop a plea deal, frankly, the way Rush Limbaugh did, who, by the way, is a neighbor of hers down in that same Palm Beach County.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all she can do. But the question is, will she be prosecuted for it? And I'll tell you, a clear violation like this, if nobody can manage to bring a case against her, well, that tells you about all you need to know about Florida.
And if you really want to know where Ann Coulter lives, Brad's got the info posted right up here on the Brad blog. It's on Seabreeze Avenue in Palm Beach.
That's right. Go say hello. Don't bomb her house. And don't bomb her real estate agent's house either, because that information is also public. And just so you know, none of this information, this was all public information.
Sure.
In fact, her actual address, the one you mentioned on Seabreeze Avenue, was posted on the Palm Beach County Property Appraisers website. And that's how, in fact, we were able to confirm that the address that she put on her registration form was wrong.
All right. Well, I want to trade you one.
Yeah.
Because the right-wing merchant of slime who's on my radar this week is a gal named Melanie Morgan.
Mm.
And I explained to listeners the other day that I have more than passing interest in this because she and others are responsible for trashing the image of a once great radio station where I once worked, KSFO, here in San Francisco. It has been a right-wing hot talk station since the mid-90s when ABC bought it and let Mr. Collins go. So that's my only axe to grind. I don't like Melanie Morgan, either you know, off the air or on the air. But what she has done is beyond the pale. She engages in routine hate speech. She has talked about Nancy Pelosi and how they've got a bullseye on her face. She makes racist remarks. She routinely baits people who don't agree with her. And so a guy named Spocko, who is a blogger here in the Bay Area, started to monitor the local programs on KSFO, the one that Morgan co-hosts in the morning and one that's in the evening hosted by a former weatherman named Brian Sussman. And Sussman also engages in far-right hate speech that shocks me because I knew him a few years ago when he was just a happy weatherman who did some stand-up comedy on the side and had no idea of his deep and dark right-wing politics. So Spocko starts to monitor these guys. He records the most hateful comments and makes MP3 files and sends them around to people. And then when his outrage built to a point that he couldn't take it anymore, he started contacting some of the advertisers that he heard on the same programs as this hateful commentary. One of them was Bank of America, another was MasterCard, and each of those companies, after reviewing these clips, pulled their advertising from KSFO. And instead of saying, oh gosh, we're going to clean this up and we're going to ask our hosts to, you know, honor basic standards of decency, ABC, which is in the process of selling this station, and all of its stations, by the way, sicked the lawyers on this little guy named Spocko. And in response, it turns out that Spocko's internet service provider, the host of his website, pulled the plug, and temporarily these audio clips were not available. Well, people like Daily Kos, Crooks and Liars, a few other websites stepped in and said, well, we're going to post these clips. Now, ABC is claiming that the blogger does not have the right to record these items and send them to third parties. And, Brad, I know the law pretty well, and I think that ABC is flat wrong. There is a fair use exclusion to copyright law, and it permits you to use an excerpt of either an artist's performance, you know, like a song or a video clip, a movie clip, or an audio clip. And I believe that Spocko is well within his rights. I'm curious, as a blogger who does post audio clips, some of which were not provided by the subjects, if you've ever come across this and people have threatened legal action against you.
Well, first let me say I've seen Melanie Morgan, and I might suggest she has Coulter envy.
Yeah.
I'll let you fill in your own joke there. But I think that these guys, yeah, I mean, they're in the, you know, they're in the game of trying to out-hate each other because that's what gets people to watch. It's like a car wreck, and it distracts from the actual issues of the day, which came up in these hearings yesterday, by the way, with Barbara Boxer and Condi Rice, which mm-hmm. may get time to talk about. But I must be doing something wrong. Because while I've had my share of death threats, I've yet to have any actual lawsuits filed against me. I think I must need to up the ante over here. I'm not doing something right.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, you can absolutely. The yardstick in general, now I'm not an attorney, but my understanding of the law is that if there is news value to something, if it's generally in the public interest, and in fact, you know, I don't know, I doubt this guy was, you know, running hours and hours of their show, but
no.
Rather pulling out clips, right?
It was clips, and yeah. It's not as if he was charging for the privilege of receiving these. If you accept money for something that you didn't, you know, create, there is a violation there.
Sure.
But he simply passed this information along as, you know, and Melanie Morgan on a regular basis uses audio clips from various sources, some of which may not be copyright compliant.
Of course. It's heavy-handed thuggery. You know, by these, you know, these corporations who have the look, they can scare a little guy. I mean, you know, guys like me, bloggers, you know, a lot of folks out there, they don't have insurance liability for that sort of thing if you're
mm-hmm.
sued, and it's scary as hell when you've got who is it, AT&T or ABC coming at you, you know, threatening to sue you. And the ISPs, of course, they don't have the, you know, they don't want to get in there and fight for this, so
right.
They roll over.
Well, here's the latest, and I want to thank Toad Boy for forwarding this to me. He got an email from Melanie Morgan yesterday. Today, KSFO management required her and this other guy, Sussman, to go on a special mea culpa program that was broadcast at noon. I didn't get to hear it. But in advance of this, she sent out this email to people she thinks are her supporters. And it reads, a smear campaign by liberal bloggers is currently underway to silence the conservative opinions offered by myself and other conservative talk hosts at one of the highest-rated conservative talk radio stations in the nation. It began when one liberal blogger tried to get us fired. When that didn't work, he began an anonymous campaign to intimidate advertisers to not support, quote-unquote, hate speech. Now, liberal bloggers are calling for our firing. They're also pushing for implication of the Fairness Doctrine to force liberal radio programming down the public's throat. parentheses. They tried to compete in the free market with Air America, and that failed miserably, so now they're using these tactics to silence conservative radio voices.
Oh, poor.
So she goes on to say, to ask people to call in during this special program where she's supposed to apologize and voice their support.
poor Melanie. Those poor conservatives, they just don't get their word out, and you'd never see them going after advertisers. Look, this speech that she thinks ought to be able to go on with no answer at all. I heard just one clip of it. What was the afternoon fellow's name?
Brian Sussman,
who gets a caller who he suspects of being Muslim,
mm-hmm.
and forces him. I think you heard the clip.
He asks him to say the phrase "Allah is a whore" as a way of proving that he's not a Muslim.
Right.
And the
lovely
guy
stuff.
The guy declines to do that, and he says, "So tell me, you eat pig?"
Yeah. this is the kind of thing that we need to get in there and protect. Look, if they want to say that, fine. But this guy has every right to go after the advertisers, and it's a shame that one little guy faces such thuggish tactics.
Yeah, we got to take a break, Brad.
Network.
We'll continue in just a moment. We'll go to the phones too if you want to join us. 888-5 Peter B. Brad Friedman with me here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540.
Have you thought about owning more real estate but don't know where to turn? Are you interested in learning how to make good profit buying and selling real estate? Or do you want to learn how to let your tenants pay the mortgage while you enjoy the equity? If you want to learn the ins and outs of real estate investing, listen to The Real Estate Guys, Sunday nights at 5 on KRXA. You can own more real estate. The Real Estate Guys will show you how. Listen Sunday nights at 5 and on the web at realestateguysradio.com.
In these United States, you have many rights. You have the right to assemble. You have the right to free speech. You have the right to worship as you choose. And when you disagree with Billy Sunshine, you have the right to be wrong.
The Billy Sunshine Show, right here on KRXA 540 AM. Tune in Sundays 3 to 5.
Hi, this is Stephanie Miller. You know how much I love the Monterey Peninsula. You've got it all. Mountains, the sea, some of the best box wine I've ever had. You also have a great radio station, KRXA, your progressive prescription. So join me, voice guy extraordinaire Jim Ward, and producer Chris Lavoie as we take back America every weekday morning, 6 to 9 a.m., right here on AM 540.
Your traffic going home Friday afternoon in the Monterey Bay area. First, we have a disabled vehicle to report. San Andro, southbound 101 after Alvarado Road. It's a stalled motorhome. It's partially blocking the roadway. The CHP is on the scene there. Carmel Valley Village, Laurels Grade Road and West Carmel Valley Road, there's an accident. Two vehicles reportedly blocking lanes, and the CHP is on the scene. Roadwork in Santa Cruz, the Morrissey Boulevard exit from southbound Highway 1. It is closed for 3 to 4 months of roadwork. Motors can take Soquel Avenue or the Ocean Street off-ramp to access Morrissey. And Watsonville, Highway 152 between Highway 1 and Beverly Drive North. Caltrans will be doing roadwork upgrades in the area until this fall. Welch's 100% grape juice has powerful antioxidants, just like red wine, and that's good for your heart. Drink a glass of delicious Welch's 100% grape juice every day. I'm Michael Kidd. Have a great drive home on KRXA.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, on time and under budget. Well, we don't have a budget, that's why. And we continue with this Bradness, Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com. Just a quick mention in reference to the flap over the blogger Spocko. His website is Spocko's Brain, no apostrophe on the Spockos, just SPOCKOSBrain.com. And there's a little button there if you want to help in his legal fights. You can make a contribution to defend blogger rights, and I think that's something that we all fully support. And, Brad, you wanted to mention something about the showdown yesterday between Barbara Boxer, the senator from California, and Condoleezza Rice, Secretary of State.
Yeah, indeed. I'm sure you've seen the reports today about this brouhaha between Boxer and Rice in those Senate foreign relation hearings. What is actually remarkable, she made a comment about, you know, she said, I don't have to pay the price for this supposed surge because my kids are too old and my grandkids are too young, and you don't have, what she said, you don't have any direct family members who would go. Well, the New York Post, Fox News, everyone else has taken, on the right, has taken this opportunity to say, oh, look, Boxer gets personal. She's slurring Condi because she has no kids. Well, what they are not reporting is, the aside from the fact that it wasn't a slur, it wasn't personal, and if you see the actual exchange, you can see that right away. She was making a rather impassioned plea that someone is going to have to pay the price for the surge in troops. And I had called at Bradblog on Sunday. I asked anyone in the media or in Congress to ask the White House concerning this escalation about what their estimates were for casualties. You know, are we going to take increased casualties because of this? And you know, they put together estimates when they put together war plans like this. If they have them, I think they ought to tell the American people what they are so that we can say, okay, yeah, let's add 20,000 troops, and that's going to mean we're going to have X number of increased dead troops in the bargain. I think Congress needs to know that. The people need to know that. And I've been calling on someone to ask that. And, in fact, Barbara Boxer asked that question yesterday of Condoleezza Rice, who admitted that the White House has no such estimates,
right,
which is incredibly delinquent. And plus, I don't believe it's true. I believe they do have it, and I believe she lied. And
well, and the smoke that they're floating is to distract you from all those Republicans who were so blunt in their criticism of Rice and the president's so-called new plan.
Oh, they sure were. I mean, the Republicans themselves were brutal in those hearings yesterday. And like I say, frankly, the one piece of news that came out of it, aside from the fact that even Republicans didn't like this escalation plan, or as they're now calling it, an augmentation, is what Condi was calling it.
I'm sorry, you only augment boobs and noses.
Well, apparently you augment troops to Iraq now, so add it to the list. But, yeah, I mean, the one piece of news is that the White House is committing 20,000 troops to Iraq and either didn't make any estimates on what the effect this will have on our troops, or they're lying to Congress about it and they won't tell them. I think that's pretty damn newsworthy, if you ask me.
I agree.
More so than this other nonsense that they're using to smokescreen from it, frankly.
Randall checks in from Tempe, Arizona this afternoon. Hi, Randall.
Well, there was some talk a couple weeks or a month ago about the new words introduced to the English lexicon, and the Oxford Dictionary was looking for the word of the year, and I wanted to nominate the word gratitude. It begins with a B, and it's the good feeling of appreciation that we have for our watchdogs of democracy.
That's really nice. Thanks, Randall.
So,
we'll put that right up there on the list with truthiness.
Marco and Vanzetti, that we could also maybe go to bradblog.com. There's a place to make donations there because our watchdog needs his biscuits.
Yeah. Okay, Randall.
But while we're at it, we're talking about touchscreen DREs. I was wondering, Brad, what do you think about the AutoMark? Didn't I hear that they had a bunch of major problems with the AutoMark in Maryland or something?
Yeah, they did have some problems, and that's unfortunate. While that is a touchscreen, it is actually not a DRE. A DRE means direct recording electronic, and it actually tabulates the votes so that you get the numbers out of the machine itself. What the AutoMark does is it's a ballot printer. It prints out the ballot, which is then taken and scanned or counted by hand by an entirely separate system. So it's sort of a worst case scenario. It's good for disabled voters who seem to like the automark a lot, and I wish they hadn't had the problems, and they were generally technical problems with printers jamming and so forth, that had been reported, because that could be an option at least for disabled voters to be able to vote in private on their own. But remember, you can't have a system, a touchscreen system, that actually counts the votes for all kinds of reasons that we don't have time to go into now. But mm-hmm. the automark is a different system, and it would be good if it worked. But ESNS bought it up, and they've been marketing it, and they've been essentially trying to keep it off the market. And I think that they were certain to make sure that, in fact, the automark had problems this year.
Randall, thank you for the call today. And, Brad, just about 30 seconds remaining. My mom always told me not to take any wooden nickels, but now I'm warned about Canadian coins?
Yes. The oddest of stories. Don't even know what to make of it. Stop by bradblog.com. Make of it what you will. But it turns out the U.S. Department of Defense put out a warning that contractors in Canada seem to have coins that are being found to have tiny radio transmitters in them. I don't know what to make of it yet, but Emily Levy from Velvet Revolution has suggested, just to be safe, everyone needs to send their coins to bradblog.com so they can't be tracked.
I love it. Have a great weekend, Brad.
Thank you, my friend. You too.
We'll see you on the blog at bradblog.com.
Happy trails to you until again.
We'll do this again Monday. Thanks for listening.
Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.
Pacific Grove Liquors is the one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, spirits, and beers at very reasonable prices. Whether you seek the ideal California or imported wine, quality distilled spirits like top shelf tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and premium vodkas, PG Liquors is your beverage outlet. Love beer? PG Liquors boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales and lagers, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand your wine, beer, and liquor store.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
There's more than one side to every issue. Actually, there's usually more than two sides. It's important to get a different perspective on issues and current events, and that's what we'll provide you on Thursday nights at 10 on KRXA 540. Our show is called, appropriately enough, A Different Perspective. I'm Jack Quirk, and I'm your host. I have guests with a unique angle on current issues. I'm often joined by Phil Rapp and other guest co-hosts who bring their own expertise to our discussions. Join us each Thursday night at 10 for A Different Perspective, here on KRXA 540.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney.
To have two endings like this is just unbelievable. Just unbelievable.
Sheriff Gary Telke in Franklin County, Missouri, where a 13-year-old boy who'd been missing since Monday was found alive today. And at the same location, they found 15-year-old Sean Hornbeck, who vanished more than 4 years ago. The boys were in an apartment rented by 41-year-old Michael Devlin. He's under arrest. Since Hornbeck's disappearance at the age of 11, his parents have made missing people their cause. Craig Diamond is co-founder of the Sean Hornbeck Foundation.
It's very common for a lot of the families to, you know, kind of shut down, you know, hoping law enforcement, you know, will do things. But the family just wanted to be out there, you know, they couldn't sit still, you know, and just wanted to be out there looking for Sean and helping other families that are going through the exact same thing that they've gone through.
Today, the Hornbecks were reunited with their long-lost son. The embattled prosecutor in the Duke lacrosse case is asking North Carolina's Attorney General to take it off his hands. Mike Nifong has requested the appointment of a special prosecutor. CBS News legal analyst Andrew Cohen isn't surprised by Nifong's move.
He's got an ethics charge he has to defend himself against from the North Carolina Bar Association, and I think he's finally realized that he has become the story here, the focal point in a case. If you're a prosecutor, you should not be in that position. So give him credit for at least this. He's recognizing it. He's trying to pass the buck over to the Attorney General's office in North Carolina, and they presumably will be able to make a decision about whether to proceed with the case or not.
Wade Smith is an attorney for one of the defendants.
We feel very positive about this development and think that it's something that needed to happen.
Another day, another vote in the House.
The yeas are 255. The nays are 170.
The bill is passed without objection. A motion to reconsider.
This bill would lift the restrictions that prevent Medicare from negotiating with drug companies for lower prices.
I'm Mark Noller at the White House, where a spokesman says the Medicare prescription drug program already in place is working just fine and shouldn't be changed. Spokesman Tony Snow says it is saving people significant amounts of money, and if Congress sends President Bush its own Medicare drug bill, he will veto it.
The Dow, after losing ground early in the day, came back to close at another record high.